Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, sounds good. I was just making notes myself. I got to change the intro a little bit and put the word Florida in my intro. I've been threatening to do this for a while, but for the most part, we were, you know, mostly an American show, but now we're reaching out. I mean, we've always had international listeners. We've been heard in over 70 countries. Countries come, countries go. It just depends on who's listening. I know it's not a huge international audience. I think that's going to change. I think that's going to change because of what we're doing. First of all, with Jan Clark in Australia, that unbelievable show that we had yesterday with her. She is amazing, truly an amazing person. And at, you know, 11 in the morning till about 2 in the morning, she stayed for the whole show yesterday. 11 at night till 2 in the morning. You know, rephrase, correction, edit. Yes, we don't do edits. We just carry on. But what was so incredible is she was awake all that time and was engaging Dr. Peter Pry yesterday in a fascinating discussion. He hadn't had the chance to talk to someone from Australia, I think ever, from what he was saying, but to be able to engage, and this is the beauty of the show, to be able to engage with different people around the world. I mean, we have a Skype line. Skype line's open. You know, it's right there on my production page. You know, live colon period CID period FDDBAC lowercase 53 lowercase A numbers 2909. Then DE lowercase and then 1. And that's how it's right there on the broadcast page. You want to, you know, what you do is you call that and then a little note appears on my Skype page and then I okay the conversation and then you're free to call the studio and I'll see that as a special code on my computer screen. And I run the whole thing from a computer screen. It's really amazing how this all works. Anyway, so that's what you do. And we also have live chat. Live chat is up and running. I'm actually getting better at that now. So live chat is going, and that's at the bottom of your broadcast page. You can type in anything. We've had, I think there was someone from Switzerland was typing us for a while. And come on back. That's the thing about doing the show myself as opposed to having a producer, which we will get back to at some point here, to help out with all the things that go on in the show, backgrounds, call screening, calling guests, you know, checking on stuff and instant research. Probably the biggest thing is instant research. I miss having that, you know, when Gene was here doing instant research, we could find out stuff. Now I have to kind of type it in. And it gets a little cumbersome, you know, as the show goes. So that I'm going to be changing when I can. CPAC, not going to CPAC. Just to announce this again, I'll be here, but Jonathan Mosley is going to CPAC, and so hopefully I'll get him to – he's our Thursday legal reporter, constitutional lawyer, Second Amendment specialist, criminal defense attorney, defending a couple of the folks in the D.C. gulag for being in the Capitol January 6th, the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. So I'm going to see if I can talk him into giving us a couple of calls from CPAC, and we'll see what's going on. No, it's a crazy story. You know, as a media credential, didn't get one. Apparently, I'm not the only one. A friend of mine I was talking to who's big into CPAC, he didn't get one either. And so we're not quite sure what's going on with CPAC this year. That's kind of a story in itself. I think that there's one person trying to do too much. And I'm not going to name them just because. You know, maybe later. We'll see. But there's definitely some confusion at CPAC in terms of their media workshops. I wanted to either broadcast from the show. I wanted to ask about teaching workshops, and I wanted to just, you know, and of course get a media credential, all of which would be extremely helpful. Anyway, so hopefully next year, you know, my dream is that they invite me, you know, to speak because we're going to be that big and that revolutionary. And as we come up to things like the midterm elections here, and Australia comes up to an election in May, and we've got trucker convoys going out to all across the United States. I think starting very soon, so at least by March 1st, I think they're going to be heading out. There's all these things happening in the world, and I'm really glad to be a part of it. I'd like to be a much bigger part of it, and that's kind of where you come in. Share the show. I mean, literally everybody you know. Just put it on Facebook and soon, True Social. And I really believe – I try to get the app, but there's like a mail app connection where my mail isn't on my phone. It's on my computer. Yeah, I'll figure it out. A tech wizard would be helpful, but that's okay. I'm going to get Truth Social as soon as it comes in. I'm going to move all the politics over there and save, like, you know, barbecue pictures and butterflies and things like that for Facebook. I don't know about the groups, though. I'll see if I can move the groups over as well, because we've got about 20 different groups, legal, family law, special investigations, you know, homeschool. We've got the Mind Project, we've got the video page, the writers page. This is a whole series of different groups at Action Radio, which I'll be moving over to True Social. And there, I think we're going to explode in growth because unrestricted, when we were unrestricted before COVID, this show was growing like crazy. We had literally, and this is one that's barely known, thousands of views. Every time I did a show, there were 1,000 people like, oh, that's new, that's interesting. So I expect tens of thousands, then hundreds of thousands, then millions, you know, once we get done on True Social, because there truly is nothing like Action Radio anywhere on the planet. And we kind of proved that again yesterday. And this is what I love doing. I love breaking new ground. I love being a pioneer. I love breaking the rules because, you know, as this fascinating TED Talk, there's this kid, that, I think he's 18 now. He started a company at 16. And you go to TED Talks and you'll see this guy. He's an Asian kid or Asian American kid or I'm not sure which. Anyway, point is, he started a company at 16, and he says, look, I suck at math. I was terrible in school. He's the only Asian kid that sucks at math, right? He says, I was terrible in school. I was a C-average student, and yet he's, you know, probably multimillionaire by now after a couple of years of starting this company. But what he said he did have was creativity, and that's what's carried me through. That's been my biggest, you know, I think, quality that I really like about, you know, what I can do. And it's also been my biggest detriment because companies don't want you to be creative. Schools don't want you to be creative. You know, there's no place for creative people. There's no room for new ideas in business, especially in radio. I can tell you that story. But there's no room for new ideas in education. There's no room for new ideas pretty much anywhere, except in rare places if you're willing to fight through. Jordan Peterson talked about this, the curse of being creative, of how the first person to do something new doesn't get anywhere. You know, it's like the 20th. It's like all of a sudden it catches on. Well, I'm hoping to change that pattern, hopefully. I think we're going to. But being creative, but school is not conducive to creativity. It's just simply not. You know, business is not conducive. They want to do what's been done before. That's why you have sequels in movies. You know, it's hard to get a movie like Rocky produced. I mean, Sylvester Stallone tried for years, years and years to get the first Rocky. Now they have, what, 12 of them? You know, because the first one worked. So nothing succeeds like success, and nobody wants to take a risk on something until it's already proven successful. And so this is not, well, I've proven it successful. We've actually done that, but we still have to reach a lot more people and get that going. And part of that process started yesterday, big part of that process. So the connections with Australia and then the connection with Canada today, we've got Jennifer Clark calling in the third hour, and she's from Ottawa. And so we're going to hear all about it. There's a lot of folks I know are personally very, very upset with what's happening in Canada. They're seeing things they never thought their government would do. I'm not surprised because I know this is what governments do, you know, and I've studied World War II and I've studied, you know, dictatorships, and I've looked at these horrible things, and I've seen documentary specials and read things on the Russian gulags and the concentration camps, Chinese camps, and the Cultural Revolution, and how fast these things happen. Usually things happen fast. You look at the breakdown of communist Eastern Europe, and when the dictatorships fell, they usually fell within a day or two. And it's interesting, in Canada, the dictatorship basically emerged within a day or two. And what's so fascinating about that to me, and I'm going to talk to Jennifer about this, is the rapidity with which it happened is the first surprise. But the second surprise is the amount of cooperation that it got from people already in government. That's the part that I find so shocking. The tolerance for dictatorship. You know, it's like this was okay. In other words, it's like they wanted this all along. And the same thing happened here in the United States when the governors were so quick to issue mandates they had no power to issue. And the government people that were so willing to follow mandates, the government had no ability to issue. So any dictatorship has two parts. It is the people to lead it, and it has the people that follow it without question. And that to me is rather shocking, that is state of affairs, that you have people leading and then following in the dictatorship. And that even happened in Florida. You know, as much as everybody loves Ron DeSantis, he was not on board at first. You know, I documented it. I wrote an open letter to him, you know, saying quite clearly, you know, dictator DeSantis. And I wrote it in an article for the Intellectual Conservative, which unfortunately has changed. They got hacked, and it's a different kind of place. So I'm going to start to write my own articles again on our website, writeyourlaws.com. So writeyourlaws.com, that's where you want to go. That's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. Has an article section, and there's going to be a lot more there too. Looks like we got, I haven't heard from this person for a while, Rick from New Jersey. So I'm going to bring him on right now. And let's see what's going on up in the Northeast frozen quadrant of socialism. Rick, welcome back to the show.
Oh, good. Good to talk to you. Yeah, it's been a long time. Unfortunately, I'm healing from a broken leg right now and a major surgery.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, that's no fun. Don't take the drugs. Yeah. Whatever drugs they give you, don't take them. No, I'm serious. Don't.
I can honestly tell you, I have 24 oxycodone here that still in the bottle.
Good, good, good. That's where they belong.
I've never taken a one.
Yep.
I've actually even stayed away from the ibuprofen because I don't like the fact they gave me ibuprofen when you can just buy that in the store.
Did you ask them why they gave you so much? Gave you so many painkillers? I'm curious because I had open heart surgery 5 years ago, and they gave me hydrocodone. You know, like bottles full. And it was like, no, give me like half of one. You know, I took half in the morning and half at night. Go ahead.
I think it's 20 or 24. I'd have to look at it. Oh, but apparently, they're very weak. They're like miniature Percocet. But I don't care. I'm not taking them anyway. So.
You know, it'd be interesting to ask them, you know, at what point do these become addictive? I mean, how many does it, I'd love a hospital to say, we're giving you 24, but at 30, they're addictive. where's the crossover point for most people? Has anybody, have you looked into that? Has anybody studied it?
The strength of them.
Okay.
I think that's their main thing. That's why a lot of people feel like, I have friends of mine that are ex-junkies.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh no, those are weak. Yeah, you can't. You got to take you know half
the good stuff
to get a good. Yeah, I'm like, well, I'm not going to take it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's synthetic heroin. It's Nazi dope.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and that's the crazy part about
it.
People don't know that these are opiates. Opiates are opium. Opium turns into, you can make you make heroin from opium. You know, from that, your body turns it into morphine, which is a painkiller that used properly is really good and will get you through hospital operations. Apparently, fentanyl was created for hospital operations in incredibly small doses. It's actually useful, but then again, it's an opiate. So at what point is the crossover to addiction? We got Bianca in the line, too. It's going to be a busy morning. Listen, we got the whole hour to talk, folks, before Shelby gets here.
Exactly.
You know, 7 o'clock Central.
Do you know why we call it?
Go ahead.
Do you know why we call it Nazi dope?
No, I'm curious.
Well, because there was no trade in Nazi Germany. There were pretty much, you know, I know it sounds unlikely, but not a lot of people liked the SS. And
For obvious reasons.
They didn't have a lot of trade agreements.
Okay.
So they had scientists actually making this. That's where most of these opioids and most of these pills that reenact the feeling of heroin or the action of heroin does to you were created by German scientists.
Oh, that's interesting. And are you saying they didn't have pain medication in Nazi Germany or they didn't have
they didn't have opium.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, your line fades in and out. We got a little bit of fade in and out from your line there. So if I miss a couple of words, I'll just let you know. But yeah. Now, I heard something that the Nazis were on some kind of speed so they could fight for like 48 hours straight and not need sleep.
Well, there was a lot of synthetic methamphetamine as well.
That's what it was. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. They're pretty much Nazis were just making dope and just being mad at Jews.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's an oversimplification, obviously. But just hang on for a second. I got Bianchi in the line, too. I want to get him on the conversation. Bianchi, good morning.
Good morning, Greg, and your guest.
Rick's a caller. He hasn't been here for a while, but Rick's up in New Jersey there, and you're somewhere in the Midwest or down
south.
Yeah,
I was going to say this. You talking about comedy. Greg, you are by no means a non-informed person. You're very informed, as if you went to college for 8 years. But I have nothing wrong with young people going to college. Matter of fact, I think what they learn in college, they should be learning early on in their education because the master, especially mathematics, you're a pilot, you know about that. It makes things so much easier when you go beyond that particular realm. And as far as the drugs is concerned, you know, the Germans, yes, they were scientists. What's creating those things? That was supposed to make you superhuman. But that's something that's been going on for a long time. Because I remember with the Zulu, the African tribe down in South Africa, when they were fighting the British, they would rub some concoctions on their body, which was designed or thought to be make them impenetrable to bullets. And it failed miserably.
Yeah, bullets. That's a whole different thing. Yeah, I remember seeing the Shaka Zulu specials. It was kind of an interesting thing. But they had conviction on their side, and the British were just kind of in this miserable outpost in Africa. It was hot. They were wearing stupid uniforms and bright red jackets and the whole bit. A couple things I want to mention. Then I want to get back to Rick here because we haven't heard from him for a while. But when I'm talking about education not having creativity, I'm not saying that education is bad. I think education is wonderful, but I think that it should be a lot. It should be changed a whole lot. First of all, it should all be private. There should be no government schools. But there is an incredible lack of emphasis on creativity. You know, the TED Talk talked about something really interesting. He had something experiment where he had a new company he was going to do, making a new product for some, entrepreneur, like a Shark Tank thing. And when he went to the junior high kids, they didn't want to do it. Oh, this is stupid. It's a dumb idea. Yeah. But he went to the elementary school kids. They're like, yeah, this is fun. Let's try it. Let's go for it. So kids, before they had their creativity knocked out of them by education, are amazing. And I remember the same thing myself when I was in college, working with the environmental project, back in my liberal days. And I still believe in environmentalism, but conservative environmentalism is something different. Anyway, I had a group of elementary school kids, and we were showing them how a solar oven works. And the teachers, lined them up and marched them in two by two, like a little army. And they came in, and then they were allowed to ask questions. And I said, come on, gather around in a circle and engage with them. And I said, yeah, you ask me anything you want, And they had these incredible questions. We're talking about solar energy and government policy and whether it's a good idea or a bad idea and solar panels on the roof. And these were like six and seven-year-olds. And then, and then all of a sudden the teacher said, time's up, line up. And then their faces changed. They went, stone blank, cold, and then they lined up in their two by twos and, hand in hand, and they marched out of there. I thought, oh, my God. I said, I've just seen everything that's wrong with education right there in this one example. You let the kids go, their creativity is there, but sooner or later, somewhere along the way, they lose it, and that's beaten out of them by education. That's the problem I'm talking about.
Let's get Pianca. You're absolutely right. I couldn't have said it no better.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, Rick, back to you.
That's actually an episode that I'd like you to cover.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard of the Prussian model.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, I routinely used to broadcast the, and I forgot where it was from, but there's a website that has about a 20-minute dissertation on how our education system is based on the Prussian model. And the Prussian model was designed to create obedient students because they found that their army in World War I, the problem with their army was there are too many people sort of making up their own orders and being innovative, something that we actually train our troops to do.
It was independent thought.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't want that in Prussia.
And they were terrified. I didn't know you already covered that because I would love to hear a whole show of you just covering the Prussian model because it's one of the most terrifying things that nobody knows about. A million people know the boogeyman, and a million people know the tooth fairy, and a million people know Santa Claus. Nobody knows the Prussian model. And it's the only thing out of that that's real, and it's the worst thing that's ever happened to free-thinking people.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you're attacking children when you do that.
Oh, it is child abuse. I mean, education is child – government education is child abuse. It's one of the worst forms short of death, because you destroy their spirit. You destroy everything that makes them them. You destroy their individuality, their creativity. And me, for better or for worse, I grew up in three different education systems, the Canadian one, the Australian one, and the American one. And the Australian one was private, and the American and Canadian were public. And so I've seen both sides of everything. It's been very interesting. And they all do different things at different times. And so I've had the same thing three times, and I've had certain other things not at all, like grammar. So I had to basically learn after school. I had to get a grammar book and teach myself how to write properly. And so that was an interesting thing, too. I'm looking at my education folder, and I'll tell you exactly which video it is, and that way you'll be able to take a look at it. But it's not hard to find. In fact, if you just go to YouTube and put Prussian model of education, there's one that starts off with
I've seen the documentary over 3 hours long.
Yeah, you don't need that one, though. That one's too long. There's a different one that's fairly short. It's about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. And it talks about the Massachusetts, the person, the guy that brought it, the Prussian model to the United States, and how all the college PhDs, got their PhDs in Prussia, and then came back in education and came back to the United States. I'll find it. If not, I'll just look it up. Let me see if I got it under my education.
I've seen it. I've read in depth and watched on it, but everybody that listens to your show needs to watch this.
Yeah.
Whatever you recommend.
Here it is. I found it.
Terrifying.
I found it. Yeah. It's 8 years ago. It's The Origins of the American Public Education System, Horace Mann, and Prussian Model of Obedience. Okay, that's what it is. So if anybody wants to find it, look up, and there's a couple of different ones. They're about 8 minutes long. The Origins of the American Public Education System, and it's got a colon, Horace Mann, that's H-O-R-A-C-E-M-A-N-N, and the Prussian Model of Obedience. It's easy to find.
That's
from Police State USA. Yeah, so the website is Police State USA, and then the other one, Redeem something other. I mean, Police State USA, that's where you find it. Okay, Pianki, go ahead.
Yeah, that school named after him on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Horace Mann, it cost about $40,000 a year to attend at preschool. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, there's a large population of black children that attend that school. Horace Mann, there's another one called Deerfield. Those are very elite schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did that too. In fact, Rick, if you go back through our shows, I'm trying to get a keyword search so people can find these things more easily. Blog Talks, I got a lot of ideas for Blog Talk. As much as I love Blog Talk, but I really wish they'd work on the ideas a little bit faster. But we did a show and we documented the difference between Phillips Exeter Academy's program and a local or a government high school. It was incredible. And we said, this is where the elites go. This is where they go to school. This is where they learn to be masters of the world. And then they go to Harvard and Yale. And it was incredible the stuff they do up there. And this was a, quote, diverse school. So they had representatives of all the skin colors in the United States, but the thing they had in common was they were rich, and they had rich parents who were, high captains of industry or government. We're definitely a stratified society, and education is a big part of it. Government school is designed to beat you down, to make you fit into a cog in a wheel. Now, this is why, I'm going to publish, I'll put it back on our website. I wrote a 14,000-word essay on a new model for education. And what I did was I took all the ancient societies, as far back as I go, the Egyptian, the Greek, the Roman, and then, of course, the Middle East and the Islamic education when it was good, the Middle Ages, the Catholic education, and then compared all these different systems together. And I found, and then I went to the one-room schoolhouse, and the ability of kids to teach other kids. And what I found was that the best way to prove that you know something is your ability to be able to teach somebody else and have them understand it. And so I based an entire model on being where the qualifications were not written tests, standardized tests, fill in the bubble, that the testing, your grading was based on how well you could teach something to somebody who didn't know what it was and had that person explain it. And so I'll publish it soon. It's it won't take too long to get it. But the whole idea is that our education system sucks because it beats people into, to fit into the society. I mean, the Matrix. You guys seen The Matrix? One of the best films ever made, on the difference between red pill, blue pill. Are you a cog in the wheel? Are you living in a dream, or are you actually seeing the reality? Who wants that one?
It's a little Caddyshack, but it was pretty good.
What's that, Caddyshack? Well, that's pretty real, too.
Yeah. I've never seen that movie, but I understand what they're talking about. Therefore, I felt I didn't need to look at it.
Well, it's kind of a cool film, but the first 20 minutes. Watch the first half hour. After that, it's just a martial arts film. But the beginning of it, the concept...
Pretty much, but it's definitely a very psychological film, and well done. But I'd like to chime in on the versions of teaching.
All right, you're a little unclear now. Either get closer to your phone or do something. You're a little fuzzy.
All right, is that a little better?
That's much, much better. Yes. Okay. So where would you like to go now?
I have the broken leg now. So my beard's getting bigger. It's getting in the way of the phone.
Oh, is that the problem? So we're talking to ZZ
to like...
Top here. I'm sorry.
You know another thing.
All right, go ahead.
You know another thing, if you talk about child abuse in government schools, there's no child abuse in government schools like the one that goes in the inner city.
Okay.
I
agree.
It's horrendous. And I'll tell you, it's really sad that these children are being denied at an early age the ability to grow up and be able to contribute certain aspects to society and also this country. It's just sad.
Well, it's really going to take, the people in the inner city, it's going to take some leaders to emerge and say the solution really is to get rid of government education. And I don't know, given the political structure, the Democrat control that treats, as I said, treats black people like farm animals. You know, you get a nice pen, your public housing, you get a, you know, you get food and water, and you're given a, you know, a little space to run. And that they keep, I mean, Democrats think of Black Americans as pets or farm animals, you know, out on the plantation to reproduce and maintain dependency. Yeah, I mean, it's absolute, and it's one of the greatest crimes against humanity, you know, that I've ever seen. And yet, you've got a lot of Black leaders going along with it. I don't understand that.
Well, I'd like to tell a very, very short. Okay.
Hold on, Rick. Just hold on a second. I want to get Rick's reaction. All right, Rick.
Well, because it pays. That's the best job in those areas is politics.
Yeah.
And the same old politics. And if it's paying well, why would you change?
That's the saddest thing I've heard. Imagine being so cynical that you're willing to take money and destroy a whole population. You talk about cultural genocide. I mean, that's it. That's what they're engaging in. And it's happening right here in our own country. Let's go over to Rick.
Very quick story. Or I'll do it as fast as humanly possible.
We got time. I've got 35 minutes, you know, before our next report. And everything I planned is out the window anyway for this hour, so don't worry about it. You go ahead and tell your story.
I was incarcerated. I was, you know, sentenced 3 years to prison for unlawful possession of an unregistered firearm because I believe in the Second Amendment right.
Oh, no.
And I didn't know.
You committed constitutionality.
Even the quickest version, I went in to get sentenced at 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. I was a little inebriated because I knew I was going away for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge asked, do you have anything to say for yourself? And my lawyer looked at me and said, don't do it. And I said, yes, I would like to apologize to the court, to the people, to you, Your Honor, for exercising my Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms and defend myself against enemies, foreign and domestic, without getting a tiny piece of paper signed by the correct bureaucrat. I apologize.
That's a good statement.
And
the judge looked at you and said?
He added 10 days to my sentence.
Oh, God. What, for making a statement?
So if I had been a judge, I would have let you go with time served. And that's surrender. You look at this thing with this one kid where the police officer that was supposedly been using a taser and used a gun. This individual, Mr. Wright, had a horrendous criminal history, even to the point where his shooting of a friend in the head has put him in a wheelchair in a vegetative state for life. But he's still out on the street.
Oh, you're talking about pot.
That's the kind of stuff I talk about.
Yeah, that's the woman in Wisconsin who shot him or thought she was grabbing a taser.
Yeah,
she said taser, and it was a gun. Yeah. Rick?
But so I don't lose my you know, what I was thinking.
Well, I want to get
so,
back to your case. I haven't finished with that one. Don't worry. We get more on
okay.
that.
Okay. Well, when I was incarcerated, I ended up becoming the teacher of a GED program.
Hmm.
That was my main thing that I wanted to do. Now, I had a really good comfy job as a maintenance man.
Uh-huh.
So I could just hang out and drink coffee all day. It was basically like being it was the best job in prison.
Huh.
So I decided I was going to help with the GED program, and they told me I had to choose one or the other. And I got pissed. I said, "Well, no, I'm trying to help everybody here, but this job is amazing. Just give me 2 months." And in 2 months, I got more people, and this is no lie, no BS, I got more people percentage-wise to pass the test by, I'm going to say, by 50 times more. So what the normal GED rate was, or the passing rate was in those classes, 50 times more because I worked with them every day and talked to them. And said, "Well, this is why I got it, and this is why it's easy to get. It's not how they teach you. That's why I hate the Prussian model. That's why I hate the feed it down your throat, shove it, you know, make it stick somehow. Mm-hmm. Like you said, kind of beat it into you."
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with every single person individually. Still, like about 75 of those guys are Facebook friends of mine.
That's interesting.
And I saved all these. Yeah.
So these are guys that were in prison with you. Or so they're in prison with you. What kind of sentences were they there for? What were some of the crimes?
Well, 90% of them were for either violence or drugs.
Okay. Using drugs? Are we talking using or selling? Or in other words, what percentage were there for nonviolent, you know, use of drugs, personal use of drugs?
Where I was, not a lot.
Okay.
I
so
was in a pretty bad place.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. And how many people were there for possessing an unregistered firearm?
Me and maybe out of like 600 guys, maybe me and two others.
Okay. So what I'm getting at is when for criminals, as I understand the way the criminal justice system, which is a criminal, you know, justice system, it's run in a criminal fashion that usually the gun charges are the first ones tossed. So if someone robs a bank, they usually plead bargain away, you know, the unregistered firearm, the unlawful possession of firearm. Those are the first charges they throw out. So I'm curious as to why they put it for you. Because it had to be the only charge. I mean, you got a discrimination. Enforcement of the law case is what you've got.
Yeah, right? Well, that was my only case whatsoever. That was my only issue.
For 3 years?
A lot of guys.
This is a 3-year sentence?
It's mandatory 3 years in Union County, New Jersey. It's mandatory. It's called the Graves Act.
Well, that's it.
There is no...
No good behavior?
You can get a three with... You can get a three with a one, which means you can get out in 1 year.
Uh-huh.
But they usually, as soon as you go to see the parole board, they usually just shoot you right down as soon as they find out you had a gun.
But you didn't do anything with this gun. You just possessed it? I mean, you literally, did you carry it? I mean, you don't have to say it,
well,
it's legal
mean,
implications. But, I mean, I'm just curious. Was it something in your
home? No, I mean, it's fine. It's been over 7 years, and I didn't do anything that would go over, over 7 years. But I was at a New Year's Eve party, and a bunch of guys were very upset with me. I was in a nightclub with my girlfriend at the time, who played basketball for UConn, and I was the only white guy in the entire club, and all the black fellas were pretty pissed at me because they all kind of liked my chick. And true story, and they were just like,
no, I believe
what are you doing
you.
With
just...
this white guy? Because my girlfriend was black.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, what are you doing with this white guy? And then when I went outside to have a cigarette, about nine guys came out. They were all members of the Bloods. And
that's a gang for those of you that are listening in Croatia, which just joined us again. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and they tried to, you know, they threatened to make me learn the lesson they wanted me to learn.
Okay.
And
be
I
with your own
I
kind,
called
kind
her,
of thing.
Yeah, or at least stay the fuck away from me.
You must have been around a bunch of black Democrats.
Watch the language. Yeah, it's going to be a language caution just because.
We're not
FCC regulated, but even so. Yeah, Pianki, believe me, I'm going to give you a chance. I want to hear your response to this, but I want Rick to finish the story. Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
So they told me to leave, and okay. I actually called
without
her,
your girlfriend
walking away, and I called
without your girlfriend or with
yeah,
your girlfriend. Okay.
She was still inside.
Interesting. And they wanted you to leave. That's interesting.
So I called.
So this is kidnapping.
I called
now,
her,
right?
And
this is I don't know what you call it.
Well, okay, I guess you can argue that if you'd like.
Yeah, that's a little extreme. Yeah, okay, but anyway, it's definitely they wanted you to leave and they wanted your girlfriend to stay. That was the point.
Well, yeah. Well, they just didn't want me at the club. That was the most important thing. They kept they made a couple of references. Blah blah blah.
Did you get called honky
cracker?
What they call
crack cracker? Crack all cracker.
Okay, so in other words, they're racist. This is a racist, you know, racial epithet. So it's a hate crime. What else have we got?
So I walked towards the corner of the bar and outside towards, you know, to the traffic light. And I called her and she answered the phone and I said, because my friend Joe was inside. Big giant, one of my favorite guys, big giant black dude.
Okay.
I said, take her to my house. And I hung up the phone. Just take her to my house. That's it. Get her out of there. Yeah. And I started walking away, and they followed me up the street. So now I was on a dark side street with nine known gang members.
Okay. Did you have a car at that point? I mean, how'd you get there?
I did, but I walked past it.
Oh, okay.
If I tried to get into it, they would have just used the car as a weapon. They would have beat me against it. Because, I mean, gang members don't usually hit you and go, you learned your lesson, pal?
Yeah.
They usually keep doing it until you stop breathing.
Yeah, okay.
So I walked. They followed me. I pulled the weapon out of my pocket. I pointed it. Well, I had it in my boot. I pulled it out. And I pointed it at them. I said, back away. They said, okay. And I kept on walking. Within a half a block, the cops were surrounding me. There was like 9 cars.
So what the hell because they called it in. See, you got to be the first. This is something I've learned, is that if you ever have a situation like that, you have to be the first to call 911. Because whoever calls first is the lead first.
I had an unregistered firearm. I knew it was going to already be 3 years no matter what.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a lose-lose situation.
Okay. And of course, the gang members were never talked to, interviewed, or was there any repercussions for them?
Oh, no. The head of the that sect of Bloods made a statement, said that I called them all the N-word.
Okay.
In
well,
the
that's,
bar,
that's pretty standard.
And they
yep.
were just trying to make sure that I got out of there before I hurt any black people.
So this is, okay. All right, let's hold it there. Pianchi? Let's walk through this.
Well, he must have been around a bunch of black Democrats.
Okay.
There's some of the races you ever want to see.
Yeah, we already know.
Hold on, Rick. Go ahead, Pianchi.
Yeah, and that's what happened that never gets reported. What city was this, by the way?
Roselle, New Jersey.
Where was it?
Roselle, New Jersey.
Well, I couldn't hear you very well, but
go ahead, Drew.
Roselle, New Jersey.
Roselle, New Jersey. Okay.
It's about 10 minutes from Irvington. Yeah.
Mm. I hear New Jersey has got some notorious gun laws anyway. So,
New Jersey is the most leftist state in the country. I mean, they have the highest proportion of Democrats. They've got the highest taxes. They've got some of the worst places. Newark, New Jersey, and there's some truly horrible places in New Jersey. Not that far from New York City.
I grew up in Irvington, which is the worst town in all of New Jersey.
Wow.
By far. It's basically – what's that?
Yeah. I said, hopefully you left. You need to write a book about this. You need to document this somewhere. You need to get it to maybe Second Amendment Foundation or something like that. But you should, you should definitely be a speaker at the next conference. I know we have one in Florida here in September, but this is a story that should get out, because I know you're not the only one that's happening. But most white guys aren't say. Go ahead.
I actually hired a lawyer who was known as the biggest. Gun rights to a Second Amendment, he was the big guy.
Well, not Johnny Cochran?
And they couldn't do anything for me.
Really?
No, Evan F. Nash.
Civil Rights Commission, violation of your civil rights? I mean, that's what this was. This is a civil rights violation. This is a hate crime.
Well, they said I had no civil rights because I broke a law that is technically...
Oh, you have no civil
rights.
Oh, now that's
exactly.
Fascinating. Is that the criteria? So anybody that the next time there's a civil rights case, it will say, well, if you broke a law, then the civil rights don't apply to you. See, I love these exceptions. It's so convenient. Government says, well, these are the cases unless, limited by law. Okay. You have the right to this, this, and this unless limited by law. Well, if it's limited by law, it's not a right. So we have civil rights for some people, but not for others. So now you got a 14th Amendment violation. You need to also look at Title 18, Section 241, conspiracy against rights. So the conspiracy of the black gang members, Democrats, allegedly, but the conspiracy to deny you your constitutional rights, the exercise and enjoyment of your rights, a freedom of association, a freedom of speech, freedom of movement, all kinds of different things. I mean, there's so many civil rights violations here, and the police are implicit. I mean, the police are, are right there with it, by not arresting the people that threatened you. That was an assault. I mean, what they did was an assault on you with potential for great bodily harm, intent that counts. That's why attempted murder is the same charge as murder, because it's the intent behind it that matters. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I tried to go with something similar to that. I'm not going to be able to say, exactly what, because that was what my lawyer was working on.
No, that's
but
fine.
They said
don't give away
because
stuff you can't give away. Yeah.
Well, no, it's not even that. It's, I just don't even know like exactly what he was working on because he seemed to be a little bit of a, I'm going to say a lame brain, which is funny for a $20,000 lawyer to be a lame brain.
Well, anyway, yeah, but I mean, obviously, you don't have the deep pockets that some people have. You need a backer. You need a story. You need we need to do something with this. You need. I would contact Kyle Rittenhouse. Seriously, he's got great lawyers, you know. And
now that he's 18, I can give him a ring.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and in fact, I think
he's got a new
foundation.
Original lawyer.
What's that?
I know his original lawyer.
Okay.
And that guy's an idiot.
Well, yeah, but he had to get new lawyers. I mean, the new lawyers took over the case. The first one would have had him convicted, you know, and locked up for life. Yeah, exactly. Well, see, now the government was in on that. I mean, was that a public defender or was that?
No, that was a privately hired attorney. He was the one who set up the meeting with the Proud Boys in Michigan with him. And
the Proud Boys
right there.
What was that, Bianchi?
Who was the judge?
Well, I have mixed feelings about the judge. I watched a good part of the trial, and the judge was occasionally good, like when one of the reporters from New York was trying to follow the jurors home. He was pretty good about that, but he also did some really bad things, too. He let a lot of things go that should not have gone. And so the judge was mediocre.
No, who was his judge?
Who was
his judge, black or white?
Rick. Yeah, oh, good question, Rick. Yeah, go ahead.
White guy.
So you said
white guy.
Old white guy. Bianchi?
Well, I was just trying to get a correlation.
Well, here's a question, though, Bianchi. Is there much difference between liberal whites and liberal blacks when it comes to judges or when it comes to any public official? You know, if you're liberal, that's the overriding factor. I don't see it so much as a skin thing as the political ideological thing. You know, if they're oriented towards, class and race discrimination.
The liberal whites usually sit in the background when the liberal blacks are in the forefront, sort of as they make sure that they do and say the right things.
Well,
you know,
I think that Barack Obama is more for white people than Hillary Clinton. So I don't think race has anything to do with that.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I don't think he's murdered as many people.
Well, that's a different story. If you're talking about the 60-some-odd people that have been killed that were about to testify or otherwise, you know, discuss Hillary Clinton, yeah, that's an interesting story. But that's totally separate. I think Obama is a globalist elitist. I think that he has more in favor or more in common with white people simply because there are more white people that are globalist elitists, but not
absolutely,
all.
Absolutely, but I think he's less dangerous than
No, I see what's happening now, the Brandon. In fact, I had an idea this morning. I was thinking of doing a video, my sorry State of the Union speech. So I might make a video on that. If that'll go, I'll probably make that Saturday.
I'd like to see
from my little desk here, from the desk of Action Radio, you know, the sorry State of the Union. And you're giving away too many secrets here. But the thing is, yeah, Brandon, we know Brandon's not in charge. We know he was put there by Mike Pence, Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer. He's there because of a collaboration between the building old party, the GOP, and the Democrat Marxists to put in a government that they chose as opposed to the one that we chose, which was Donald Trump. More and more evidence is coming out on that, but it's so overwhelming now, it's ridiculous. Anyway, but the point being that Brandon isn't running the country, and obviously not Kamala Harris, the party girl. She's not running things either. So who's running things, I believe,
no idea.
Is the globalist. Yeah, they have no clue, right? So she's over there trying to stop. She'll probably start a war in Ukraine just to get rid of her. You know, I mean, she's so bad. You know, she doesn't piss everybody off, you know, within a little while. I mean, she'll be, I'm sure they're going to send her packing pretty soon, too. If you really want to screw things up, send in Kamala Harris. But the point is that I see the world is divided up into foreign policy and domestic policy. I see Hillary as more the Minister of Internal KGB Security. She's running Merrick Garland. She's the one responsible for all the domestic terrorism, you know, the condemnation of the parents, the D.C. gulag, you know, all the persecution, all the Russian, Chinese, communist things that are happening in this country from the Brandon insurrection are coming from Hillary. Where I see Obama, He's the one who's boosting the Iranian nuclear program, who gave all our weapons to the Taliban so they could nation build, who brought in 100,000, you know, goat herders from Afghanistan and their five-year-old wives. He's the one screwing everything up internationally. So they divided the world into two different spheres. These, and of course, they have their own handlers, you know, Soros, Gates, Bloomberg, you know, the Klaus Schwab. You know, not Charles Schwab, the broker, but the World Economic Forum. So I have a bunch of stories on the World Economic Forum. I might get some of them tomorrow. But we talked about that yesterday when Jen Clark was here from Australia, the Melbourne Project, where the United Nations used Melbourne as their stellar example of how to restrict a population and test the various effects of their sustainable development goals. And there are 17 of them, which I'm probably going
to
go over tomorrow.
I have to
we have about 15 minutes left. Oh, yeah. Well, you got to listen every day. Rick, we break new. We had a 3-hour call yesterday from Jen Clark in Australia, working on an Australian bill of rights. Where you been,
I'm fighting
dude?
Off my new oxycodone addiction.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to ask you a question on that, too.
I haven't taken one pill. I'm safe, I promise.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that's good. Let me tell you, I'll tell you what I think the danger is. I remember from after heart surgery, and they gave me these hydrocodones. I actually took one. They gave me they're going to give me up to 8 a day. I'm thinking, wow, that seems like a lot. Let's try one and see what happens. Well, I felt like Superman. I was ready to fly down the halls. I mean, literally, I felt like I could fly down the halls. I'm thinking, is this what heroin's like? Jeez, if it's anywhere near close to that, I can see why this stuff's so addictive. So I never took another whole pill again. Even when I had 4.5 liters of fluid drained from my chest because of blood thinners that almost killed me, and my lung was reinflating, one of the most painful things I've ever experienced. I only took, that's the only time I ever took, I think a whole one or a half one. I think I took actually, one and a half, half in the morning and then half in the afternoon and then half in the evening. But the problem with these addictive opiates is you feel like Superman. You feel really good. And I thought as soon as I felt that good, I knew that was too much. That was my warning signal. And I think, and I can see why these things are so addictive, because people, that euphoria, I can see where, you'd want to have that again. Now, I knew enough that as soon as I felt good, I always maintained a little bit of pain just so that I knew what not to do. So pain is useful if you use it properly. And so I maintained a low level of pain so that if I moved the wrong way, did the wrong thing, with my open heart, surgery and stitches and tubes and everything else, I'd know not to do that. But I also knew that if I start feeling good, you're not supposed to feel good.
That's
okay?
Smart thinking.
That's what I thought, yeah. And so there's that line. So if you don't maintain this pain is actually very useful, but you don't want a crippling. So to be in crippling pain, that's just waste. That's just a waste of time. It's not doing any good at all. But a little bit of pain is very useful, especially with your leg. If you maintain a little bit of pain, you're not going to get into the addictive phase. You're not going to get into the euphoria part of the hydrocodone. Or I never took oxycodone. They gave me the weaker form, hydrocodone, and that was bad enough. That was powerful enough. And I told the nurses, I talked to the head nurse for quite a while. I said, this stuff's dangerous. What the hell are you doing with it? Well, we have to have zero pain. All the surveys they do, the first thing they ask you, what's your pain threshold? Are you at zero? Are you at 10? Do you have a happy face, a smiley face, or do you have a very sad face? They treat you like a 2-year-old. They do this. Go ahead. And I got another.
You give it 5 stars, 1 star, or 2 stars. What are we rating?
Yeah, exactly.
Restaurants here?
Yeah, and now the Michelin Guide to Pain presents, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's the
Zagat's Junkie book.
Yeah. How did they handle you? What did they talk to you about when they talked about in terms of pain and medication? How did they handle it with you?
Well, I was just about to bring that up. I hated that because I went to I just found out I'm getting a second surgery in 9 weeks, which I did not sign up for a second surgery, but I guess that has to happen. They got to take the screws out of my bones because it's holding my leg together.
Okay.
And so she goes, well, how are you with Percocets? Which they're not Percocets, they're oxycodone.
Okay.
I said, I'm fine. I'm good. And she goes, are you taking it often? And I said, no, not at all. She says, well, when it gets bad, stay ahead of the pain.
Oh, what does that mean?
Yeah, that meant take them. Like, she's like, just take them whenever you can, because then we can sell you more.
Yeah, how far ahead of the pain? Did you ask her?
Well, no, I just looked at her. I go, I didn't need them. Haven't needed them once. I made me sick to my stomach. So, yeah I'm not going to take them. And she goes, well, I mean, just don't. Don't rule it out.
Go, oh, okay. And do you know the incentive behind that? Do you know the incentive behind that? I mean, there's a reason why they do this.
Well, yeah. First of all, they can sell more.
No, there's another reason too. They're rated the CMS, the Center for Medicaid Medi-Cal Systems Funding. That's what they judge hospitals on those pain surveys. So there's incentive for hospitals to get money from Medicaid patients and other money that they'll, it's just like COVID. This is why they give money for remdesivir and they give money on a ventilator. And if you die, they don't care. There's $100,000 per dead person, you know, as opposed to minimal, you know, outpatient hydroxychloroquine is like $20, you know, to cure you of COVID. But there's $100,000 in it if they kill you. Okay. So the same thing works with this. So there are surveys that go to, did they give you a survey? You know, how was your pain? How was your hospital treatment? Bet you they did.
Just a checklist, just an oral checklist.
Okay, but that's a survey. That goes into the CMS. That goes into their hospital. Yeah. That goes into their plan. So in other words, the lower pain threshold they can get, in other words, no pain at all, if they can get you to zero pain, they get more money for that. Oh.
Huh.
Whether or not you die, it's whether you die or not, it's irrelevant. Whether you get addicted or not, it's irrelevant. If they were rated on the addiction, in other words, if they could prevent addiction, you know, if they could lower the rate of addiction and they made money for that, then they would immediately withdraw the pain medication and they give you only as much as you need.
I told her, I said, I'm not taking them. There's no way.
Right.
I go, it's not my, you know, not my style. I go, this is not something that I can't just live through no matter what. Yeah.
Did they give you the pain medication to keep and or, you know, give away? Because that's what they did with me way back when. Yeah. They said, hey, well, take these anyway. You might need them. What? Wait, I walk out of the hospital with a bunch of drugs? Or I had wisdom teeth surgery years ago. And they gave me all the wisdom teeth surgery. Go ahead. I'll tell you that in a minute.
I think what she was trying to do was get me to give me another prescription.
Oh, more money.
Because she said, how many have you used? How many do you need? How many more do you need? How often are you taking it? Because she knew I was supposed to be out. I was supposed to be completely done with these by the time I saw the second, you know, when I went for the follow-up.
Oh. And how many did you have left? All of them?
Every single one of them is here.
Okay.
Every single one of them is here.
Oh, you still got the same 20? You still got the bottle? I heard it shaking. You still got the bottle.
Yeah.
Well, it's the pain that you use to determine how well things are coming along.
Rick,
what's that?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Pianchi, go ahead.
I said it's the pain that is used to determine how well the healing process is coming along.
Oh, absolutely.
So if your pain levels, after a period of time, your pain levels drop, you have flexibility and mobility. Without the pain, then you know things are working the way it should. You shouldn't have to use the medicine.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the medicine would mask the pain.
Exactly. I can't move the foot for quite a long time, for a few more weeks, but I noticed that it went from a sharp pain to a throbbing pain. I went, oh, okay, that's good. That's a good sign. I didn't have to hide it.
Yeah, throbbing pain is a good sign.
Exactly, but that's why I hated that they were trying to shove more oxycodone down my throat, and I'm not, you know, you're not going to be able to get a kickback or a high five from your pharmaceutical rep. It's not going to happen. Not on me.
Yeah, this is very interesting. We're going to have to hold up here. I got a few things to play, especially I missed my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece yesterday because we got a little busy with things. And I've got Shelby, Cruise and Travel, at the top of the hour. Then I've got Josie with the Latino Report. Then I've got a very special guest from Canada, Jennifer Clark's calling in from Ottawa. And so we've got a busy, busy day. But, Ricky, call back more often. This is a fascinating story. I want to hear more of it. I had the hydrocodones. I had them for a while until I eventually just threw them out, you know, because I didn't need them. After wisdom teeth surgery, they gave me a whole bunch of, I think it was Percocets, you know, painkillers, and I kept them, you know. And guys I was working with at the time said, well, give them to me. I'll take them. No, you're not. I'm not going to give you prescription medicine.
I'm willing to sell these to Democrats.
Okay, there you go. Yep, we're here first. But stick around. Actually, you may want to call in Friday with your gun story. We have three gun reporters, or at least, you know, especially some of the folks that might be able to help you out. We've got Shirley, Jim,
what time
and Chappie. What time Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what was that? Yeah, Shirley's on at 6:30 Central Time. Jim's on at 7 Central Time. And Chappie comes on at 8 o'clock. And Derek, right, our financial person, is on at 7:30. Yeah, Fridays are crowded. Fridays are busy. And sometimes when we can, Alan Dawson, tour guide, calls in from Belize on the Skype line. So it's a busy day. Anyway, let me let you all go for a bit here, and then I've got Shelby coming on just a bit. I've got to play you some things here, and then we will be right back. Rick, thank you very much. Fascinating discussion this morning.
Take care of yourself,
you,
bud.
All right, you too. All right, so let me play this now. I'm going to make the Anti-Federalist number 9 today to go along with Federalist number 9. So let me play this now and a couple things. I'll be back with Cruise and Travel. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Papers number 9 was written by our now familiar friend, Alexander Hamilton, November 21st, 1787. And again, he starts in on how the Constitution is required to keep a firm union, which he defines right in the beginning. A firm union will be of the utmost moment to the peace and liberty of the states, as a barrier against domestic faction and insurrection. It is impossible to read the history of the petty republics of Greece and Italy without feeling sensations of horror and disgust at the distractions with which they were continually agitated, and at the rapid succession of revolutions by which they were kept in a state of perpetual vibration between the extremes of tyranny and anarchy. Why he compares us to ancient Greece and Italy, which had completely separate city-states like Sparta and Athens, who went to war with each other, as a justification for a strong central government under the new Constitution as a barrier against domestic faction and insurrection, where some 73 years later the U.S. had become completely factioned and was in fact in a civil war, is a complete mystery. But he does love that recurring theme. Leaving behind the ancients who screwed up their republics with despots who created tyrannies over the people, Hamilton makes a huge leap to our modern republic, and after saying the science of politics has received great improvement, then perfectly describes the way a republic is supposed to be characterized, saying this: the regular distribution of power into distinct departments, the introduction of legislative balances and checks, the institution of courts composed of judges holding their offices during good behavior, the representation of the people in the legislature by deputies of their own election. These are wholly new discoveries, or have made their principal progress towards perfection in modern times. They are means, and powerful means, by which the excellences of a republican government may be retained and its imperfections lessened or avoided. One imperfection that needs immediate addressing is that judges need to be held to good behavior and not the mythical lifetime appointment. The biggest problem with Hamilton is that he likes the adulation he obviously received for bringing into his Federalist Papers so many irrelevant examples of failed governments, and from those false comparisons projected what would happen should the new Constitution not be ratified. This is disingenuous. However, if you look carefully through the long paragraphs of fluff, he has his moments of brilliance. So let me set aside all the philosophers he quotes and the foreign failures that don't apply, and end with a moment of clarity for Hamilton. He says, "The proposed Constitution, so far from implying an abolition of the state governments, makes them constituent parts of the national sovereignty by allowing them a direct representation in the Senate, and leaves in their possession certain exclusive and very important portions of sovereign power. This fully corresponds in every rational import of the terms with the idea of a federal government." Oh, if only the states had retained their direct representation in the Senate, that the income tax were still apportioned by population and paid by the states and not by individuals. And if only our money came from the U.S. Treasury and not the Federal Reserve, maybe we wouldn't be where we are. So maybe the problems with the Constitution are not so much as it was ratified, but much more how it was amended. I'll be considering that prospect a lot more in future Founding Moments. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Yeah, man. Como Shelby, to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go. Well, either the world's lightening up or it's not. Let's find out. Can we travel yet, Shelby? Please, 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 can we travel?
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. You know, it's yes, I just got off a cruise, and
okay.
Is it lightening up? It is lightening up, but I still don't see the kind of movement, you know, that we should have by now, and it's a little disappointing. We had a great cruise. But
where'd you go? Where'd you go? Which line? Tell me the details. I want details, details, details.
Yeah.
I want to go cruising
too. Okay, well, this is a very interesting cruise. I don't know if you've had a chance to follow on social because there's a lot of funny, interesting things about this cruise. The basic is that it was on the Celebrity Summit,
okay.
And which is a high-end cruise line. Really, really amazing food, staff. They really think of all the details. And it was to NASA. And we went to Pearl Island, which is an island off of Nassau, which is I would consider a very authentic, older style island, not modern, but it was very cool, like the real, it was very slow.
Real Caribbean, man. Went there to the island.
Yeah, but the drinks were real too, you know what I mean? Those special drinks, you never taste it like that anywhere else, you know?
Oh, my God. A lot of fruit on top, a lot of pineapple pieces and things and you know, stuff.
Lots of natural ingredients, really, so you can taste the difference, you know, when you ask them for a rum punch or pina colada, it's a real difference. So that was really fun. And then we also went to Haiti. We went to Labadee, which we don't frequent often. And I always feel such a kind of a tug in each direction because, you know, I know it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And I know the problems Haiti has. And we have our finger on the pulse with a lot of Haitians that live here in Florida that have escaped somehow or another. And it's just a very sad state of affairs. However, because their government is so lacking, they don't have any infrastructure, and it's like going to like a jungle paradise because they don't they don't have anything built up, and it's a very dangerous place. It's one of the only places I think I've ever told guests not to do their own thing and get off property. It's a place where they fence it off from the Haitians as well. Like it's a protected area that the cruise ships basically rent from Haiti. And it's natural, amazing paradise, and you won't meet nicer people. They bring a few Haitians in to sell you some handmade trinkets and a few to do some dancing, which was lovely. All I could do is make sure my group went there and spent some cash. I said, just please spend some cash here. It's the only way these people are going to get any money in their pockets. So whatever you got for cash, go buy something and pay more than you want, you know, because these people are like starving and this is our only way to help, in this, you know, on a beach day with a bunch of partiers.
I know what you're saying. Scenario. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was that. But the very interesting part about this cruise is that it wasn't a normal family cruise. It was an adults-only cruise.
Uh-oh.
Very racy. We're in conjunctions with this brand called Temptation, and they specialize in tops optional at the poolside. Party, but very high-end European-type style. They gave the travel agents one night, they did a Moët Chandon party for the travel agents on board, which travel agents don't appreciate that well. So that was
Moët
kind of surprising.
Moët Chandon is champagne, or what is that? I'm not familiar.
It's a very expensive champagne. Gosh, you're
okay,
so
right.
cute.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard Dom Perignon, but, you know, I should be well-versed in my high-end champagnes. I mean, I might have to actually drink them one day.
No, I mean, it's not Dom.
You never know.
It's definitely a step up. But okay. Anyway, it was a tops optional party cruise.
Did you? Yeah,
no,
we have to know.
Not.
Did you? You don't have to tell,
yeah,
but
so
I'm going
to
ask you anyway.
Answer to this. I absolutely have no problem going tops optional. I've done it at a lot of European resorts, beaches that have that option. However, not when I have a group of people on board. Like, I kind of, when I'm the hostess, I do keep my top on because I just feel like somehow a bikini is much more professional at that point.
So it's okay when nobody knows.
But
you don't think people take you. You don't think people take you seriously if you're like exposing yourself to everybody? Okay, fine. That actually makes a lot
right.
of sense. I just think it's funny, but I had to know just because I was curious.
It is
because
it's
action
it's
radio. I got to ask you. Yeah, I'd go topless.
Hey,
look, if you went topless,
yeah,
I'd go topless. I mean, at first fair. You know, I'm into equal treatment here. Not a problem.
Yeah, you know, it's like I would say 60% of the women were topless, and 40% were. And what I love about it is that nobody makes you feel uncomfortable if you're not going to go
right.
all the way, type of thing. You know, and I like I said, if
well, the guys are looking
vacation,
at a distance. The guys, we have an art form for how to look at women and not have you know that we're looking at you. I mean, it's a well that we started at a very young age, like 8. You know, kind of goes from there. So it's a well practiced art.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
all the women got checked out. It's just that. We try not to make it obvious. Yeah, go ahead.
These girls don't mind if it's obvious. This is a different type of woman that goes here. She is very confident. Is very sexually okay with, you know, being very sensual, utilizing her femininity. Definitely the type of woman
that
goes on. Yeah, these women are. These are the nicest women I've met in a big group before, too. They don't have this, like, put down other women. They're very celebratory of, like, you're so gorgeous. I love that dress. They're very confident. It's a very confident woman. And they're fine with it. They're like, look all you want, you know, like, I got it. And all shapes and sizes and ages. But the main age was, like, 35 to 55, I'd say.
Okay.
Most past guests. They know this brand. They're ready to party. It's like the party is like it was surreal for me because I've been on so many ships, 500 cruises plus or so, and I've never, of course, experienced anyone being topless and, you know, dancing around like crazy wild people and drinks are flowing and pretty
it's
much
on
the
a
whole
ship.
Bar.
It's okay, you know, you're not.
Yeah, but I've never
I'm sure
that.
Videos are not allowed. Did
that's
people
right.
allowed to do self?
Yeah, no
okay,
videos,
that's what I was wondering.
No
yeah, pictures. Yep.
Not really yep. any pictures. You can take you can take close pictures of yourself, but there is security there to stop you from taking pictures.
Yep.
And they're pretty strict about it. They're also strict about keeping your pants on.
Well,
no full nudity.
At least on deck.
And yeah, absolutely. In public area, any public area. No nudity and no public sex. And that's a big, that's really the only brand that doesn't kind of do all or nothing. Cause from my research now, there's a whole brand that has people that are really into having sex in front of other people and being nudists, and they call that
au
naturel now.
They call it au naturel.
Okay,
is there a
so
cruise that does that?
So here's where it gets good. So
okay.
Because travel has been so tough and people don't want to get their vaccines to go on the ships, right? And especially
right.
this crowd, I was not surprised that they didn't sell out because this type of person – most of them are more like my body, my choice, and I'm not getting your vaccine. And so that was kind of interesting to me to see how they were going to fill this ship with this personality, because these type of people are very like, they're the kind of people I want to hang out with in Armageddon. We're like, okay, you know, they're very much the, I got this. And
yeah.
anyway, So because they couldn't fill the ship and they chartered it, you can't do this without chartering a ship. You can't, you know, they don't allow this type
of... So the whole, every passenger is like part of the group? So it's the entire ship, is it one group? Is that how they do it?
It's done by one company. And
okay.
they charter the ship. So they take out of the risk. They have a certain monetary commitment and they can't go back at some point. So you have to sell the cabin or you eat the money. You just have
right.
to pay. So because they couldn't fill the ship with the Temptations people, they also have another brand that's the sex brand, I would call it. Really. It's couples and nudists. And I'm like, okay, like for me, I'm like, I am so cool with the big DJ parties, girls topless if they want to be, drinks flowing. That sounds great. When you get into the sex in public, nudist, I'm like, not so interested. Like, but they had to open it up to that, to their clientele because they couldn't sell the cabins. So what they decided to do was make the solarium pool basically the naked pool.
Oh,
and couples and no sex in public still, so they said. And but you could take your bottoms off. So you had like the Temptation fun people.
Yeah, sex underwater.
Yeah.
How much sex is underwater?
Yeah, I'm sure that happened. we were mostly in the Temptation side pool, the party, but we did actually go into the naked side fully clothed. And I was glad no one was upset with me for being clothed because it was freezing when we left at Miami. And I really wanted to go to the hot tub, but it was really freezing out. I was like, dang.
Oh, my
like,
goodness.
We got to go to the naked pool? But I was like, I'm not going to risk it. Like, I'm that
cold, and I don't
care. Was
there a sign that said the naked pool?
No, there was a sign, no sex in public, though.
Oh, okay.
They did have that sign up.
That I'd like to see a picture of. That would be worth a picture.
No, I definitely did not take any pictures in there.
Okay.
But, yeah.
No, just the sign.
There we just,
I just want to see a sign that says no sex in public.
It's been a very interesting crowd. By the way, I should start by saying it's the most fun I've ever had on a cruise out of 500 cruises by far.
Go.
I mean, like, not even close. Like, you think you had fun on a cruise? You didn't. You didn't go with these people. The nicest group of people.
Action Radio
ever
goes
imagine.
Topless. We've got to do an Action Radio topless
there you
cruise.
Go.
We got to go. We got to organize it. We got to
well,
go. I mean,
I would love
yeah,
that. So what we are thinking of doing, I don't want to get off track. Let me finish the cruise. So,
okay, sorry.
Anyway, the cruise was super, the most fun. The people in this type of lifestyle are very fun and open and free and non-judgmental. And I, after a lot of thought, I'm like, maybe they're not judgmental because they're doing such crazy crap that it really doesn't matter. How could they be judging you? You can't throw stones in a glass house. But they really are the nicest, like, no judgment. And another thing is even when – so some of them are in the lifestyle. But no, the lifestyle is AKA swingers. And, I didn't know that was a thing so much. I heard about it in the 70s. Sounded kind of nasty. Like, but, you know, I like being monogamous. So that's me. And I don't mind saying so. Like, I love being monogamous. I find that to be a very fun, nice, beautiful place to be and hard to get, actually. So
yeah.
Having
yeah.
sex with random people, probably not so hard. Having sex with one person for a long time, a little harder. So I like monogamy, but, you know, I've been hit on in my life, and in any rejection, no
well,
matter how
well, that's
because
you're
nice,
drop-dead gorgeous, Shelby. That's why you've been
oh.
hit on. I mean, you know, that smile is just, you know, those big, bright, sparkly eyes. There's no, most guys, you know, I'm surprised if most guys would pass you by and not go, wow, gee. You know,
oh,
so yeah, that's why.
Thank you, but it's I don't see it that way exactly. But anyway, any guy
don't.
That comes up to me and I
no gorgeous
and,
one ever
and
does.
Approaches me.
This is the funniest
some
thing. Oh, okay. Well, tell me about that. Yeah.
Most of the time there's a rejection. Once you reject a guy in any capacity, they generally don't treat you very nicely. It's kind of like,
ooh.
Oh, whatever then. You know, and you're like, dude, I'm sorry, you know. But in this case, when the couples approached us and was like, so, you know, they're very tactful. I mean, they could really give men a very good lesson on how to approach women because you don't really see it coming. They're just like, how's it going? You having a great time? Rah, rah, rah. And they get into, they don't ever ask what you do, which is also very weird because generally everywhere you go when you meet someone new, the first question is, what do you do? But because of this type of lifestyle, I think everyone's trying to stay private because some of these people are like CEOs and, you know.
Oh, yes, captains of industry, you know, they're probably school teachers.
Right.
You know, you've got,
right.
you know,
so,
how many priests did you have?
So these people don't ask what you do, which is also kind of funny, but they're very much in the moment. Their vibration is just so loose in a bad way, but like just very, everything is all good and there is just no drama and you just feel really safe. And then when they finally get to the point where they allude to offering to maybe get to know each other better privately or whatever, and I'm always like, oh, thank you. Still, thanks. I'm, you know, no, I'm not so much into that, but thanks for offering. You know, they don't drop you like a dead weight. They're like, oh, that's okay. Don't even worry about it. We were like that, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they tell you stories and whatever. But a lot of them are also nudists. They live at nudist places. And this is the desire crowd, not our crowd. It, like I said, they combined the two because of the situation with COVID. But I find it like, I really felt at the end, I'm like, these nudists are like an MLM, like, attack. Like, they really want you to try it so bad. Like, they're like, please come just stay at our house. No pressure, no strings. I'm like, dude, I am not going to your nudist colony. It's not happening. I'm not interested. Like, I don't have any. I was just in the nudist place. Like, I saw a lot of, I got it. Like, it's not for me. Don't, you know, okay. But they're like, you really got to try it. I'm like, I really don't. Like, I don't. And I have nothing against being nude or nude beaches, but like when it comes to living
body,
in the
choice.
Nude,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. Mowing your lawn in the nude, gardening in the nude. I'm like, it's just crazy. Like, I'm like, you guys are at a different level, but it's all good. Like, a no judgment. I really don't have any judgment on it. But it was very interesting. So that was the interesting part of the cruise. Now, let me fast forward to a few other things that might intrigue you at Action Radio. So after this cruise, you know, and we had a travel agent training on the cruise. I had a couple agents, and we're doing another travel agent training this weekend on Sunday. If anyone's interested, travelfun.biz, or just, you know, message me, Shelby Frenette or Solo Travel Expert. But we definitely, the travel agent training, we were like, you know, we have so many unvaxxed friends that don't want to get vaxxed, and the resorts that they have are in Cancun, and they have a new one in DR. So we are thinking of doing a top optional resort that's unvaxxed friendly for Halloween 2022. So that could be something that Action Radio pops onto, and we could, you know, have a fun little group over there, which is you know, Action Radio tops off, and that would just be the tops. So that's something to think about. But yeah, that was an exciting week. It was it was definitely a tantalizing week. They have theme nights, they have lace parties, pajama parties, 80s night. They had a fairy, like you dress up as a fairy night. They had erotic air shows. So
what's that?
Amazing. Well, it's kind of like a better Cirque du Soleil, and I've seen Cirque du Soleil. It's even better than that. It's the dancing, it's the aerial, it's the hoops, it's you know, topless, it's sensual, it's dancing, it's you know, done with a lot of very popular moving music that you can relate to. They really just had it all. The lighting. It was spectacular, so that was really cool. And then they had an incredible piano player that was fantastic. She was a riot. I mean, probably the funniest piano player, tongue-in-cheek, everything tongue-in-cheek, you know, in the lounge. They had a comedian that he's just an absolute riot. And, again, everything's for risque humor. It's not nothing went over the edge for me. Except, you know, I wasn't offended by anything, but I'm not offended by anything. They're very clever. They really went all out to make it a special party, with little surprises everywhere you looked, and you got little surprises in your cabin. And, again, Naughty by Nature is one of their, promotional pieces. So we get bags saying Naughty by Nature, and it's just very cute. So they do a great job, and we had a fabulous time. So it was a great experience. But as far as the vaccines go, they check your vaccine card, you know, as you walk in. That doesn't seem to be so important now. Like, I mean, they're not like the last cruise, they seemed a little bit more concerned about it. Now they just kind of look at it and pass on. But they didn't even do testing at the port. They had us do our own testing in a proxy, like by video, or you could go to your drugstore and get a test. You had to have it within 48 hours of the cruise. So, okay, well, thankfully we tested negative, but who's to, like, and then it goes into the database, so I guess they have a way to check it. But they're just looking at our computer screen. That I'm like, any of this could be, like, not legit, and I'm sure it's all different, so people don't know. And then what about the day before the cruise? Like, you can't catch it then? So,
well,
that
no,
seems
also,
kind of like...
If you can't go on a cruise because of a positive COVID test and there's like 95% false positives, there's a huge amount of false positives in this. Do you lose all your money for the cruise? Is there a guarantee that if you test positive, you get all your money back, or do you lose it?
So the cruise lines are really obviously trying to work to make this as painless as possible for the guests.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a credit. Like, they will just credit you everything.
Okay.
Every cruise line works a little differently, but I would say from all the people that I have found that have tested positive, the cruise lines have gone above and beyond, even paid for hotel fares. Some, they're the kind of higher end cruises, but hotel fares until you could get a rebooking for your flight and quarantine and all this jazz. So they've tried very hard. Plus there's COVID insurance now. So they sort of pick up the slack if you need to stay and be quarantined in a hotel, in that area,
mm-hmm.
or if you need to be flown back. So I would say your money is fairly protected in the sense that it's not just going to be lost, but you'll have a credit, or, you know, and you have to have insurance. In fact, I don't even think they do allow you to travel without insurance, but many of the cruise lines are adding a fee if you do. So, and they do have those boats. I wanted to mention this. I found out a little bit about the boats that you're talking about, the COVID
medical. The ghost ships? Yeah, what's going on
there? I didn't find out as much as I'd like, but that it is a thing, that they do have that, that they would just take the crew and passengers off if they had them and bring them to port. It's not like a quarantine necessarily, but they just want to get them off and back into a quarantine area or position or off the ship so there isn't a big infection on the ship. So that is happening, and you were absolutely right about that.
Yeah, that's Ellen.
Ellen
Dawson in Belize told us about that first. He
wrote
that story about a month ago. And he's trying to get pictures. Do you have any indications of where the ships are from? You know, do we have a name that we can look up a registry? Is there any more information on this? Because this should be known. I mean, actually, I'm surprised. The reason I'm curious is because they're not talking about this. It's not being broadcast. You know, you think,
right.
You know, the cruise lines would say, for the safety of our passengers, we even have a hospital ship trailing our ships right now. So that if COVID does break out, you're going to be well cared for and taken care of by our hospital go ship that's that sneaky little ship sitting behind you that you can barely see, you know, or something like that. You know, I mean, they wouldn't do it quite like that, but you would think that would not be a problem.
I would look into it further and try to find out more, but no, I don't have any of that info. I will say,
okay.
Another a tragedy that happened, not on our ship, but while we were cruising on the Carnival Valor. One of my just a friend from past the singles groups. He was traveling by himself, and he was on the ship that this woman jumped off in broad daylight. Basically, there's video of her on deck screaming at the security. It was like 2:00 in the afternoon, and you know, the deck was really full, and screaming, "Alicia, Alicia!" And my friend said that he saw her throw drinks at people and throw food at people. And
wow.
Security put handcuffs on her and brought her from the deck into, clearly, you know, to her room, very likely.
Right.
And as soon, it was like, it wasn't just about 2 minutes later, you heard a splash and everyone go over to the side. What would happen is, from my understanding, is that the security put her in her balcony and they cuffed her, and she jumped off the balcony and hit the side of the boat on the way down and was never to be found. And just committed suicide. And it's just kind of crazy. I was surprised because I have dealt with some suicide attempts on board. You know, I've been working for years, and we have thousands and thousands of people. And I always say, you know, going on a cruise can be very exciting, and it can also dredge up a lot of emotional stuff. And then on a singles sailing, it can be even more intense because a lot of people are processing, you know, some past pain and things like that. So anyway, I've had a few suicide attempts in my groups over the years, and so I'm usually the first one to be called to the scene. And what I have noticed is that they always, if they're in a balcony, they take the balcony handle off so you can't get out of the balcony. And I thought that was kind of an over overarching precaution. However, now I believe that that probably should be protocol everywhere, because, you know, that's exactly what they're trying to avoid, is someone that's mm-hmm. going wild and just jumping off the ship. So sad. But yeah, I think with the state of the world, I mean, it's really unpredictable, because people are living in such a high anxiety state for so long. Mm-hmm. And so I've been following the Canadian situation, you know, because I'm also Canadian, and it's very stressful. It's very stressful for me to think about the future. And, you know, I feel like I don't know what's going to happen. The truckers for the U.S. are supposed to start today, correct?
I know that. Well, I've got a schedule. Go to, let me pull up the website for you right here. I've got it on my notes. Scroll back up here. Where did I put them? I think it's American. Well, I thought I had it here. I know I got this open. I know I got it somewhere. Let me get my, hang on. Keep scrolling. Where is it? Oh, I don't think. Yeah, here we go. AmericanTruckersFreedomFund.com. That's AmericanTruckersFreedomFund.com. That's the website. That's where we had Bernadette and R.C. Pittman on last week with Kip Colson, as one of the organizers of the trucking event. So you go to AmericanTruckersFreedomFund.com and go to the route section, and you can see all the different routes that they're taking across the country, from California, from Washington State. There's been local ones. We had one here on the coast, Gulf Breeze, Navarre, Pensacola had a little convoy last weekend. And so there are events going on all over. They're crossing through here, the Milton, Pensacola area where I am, I think on March 5th. So they're starting on the 1st, and they're stopping off. They're doing so much per day. The great news for us is that they're going to put our bill links onto this page. I haven't done it yet, but AmericanTruckersFreedomFund.com. And so we got three bills that I'm talking about, but there's like five different issues there. I'm thinking, well, maybe we can write a couple more bills with the truckers. They've got the wall, and they've got energy, and those are the border wall plus energy, and those are things that I didn't deal with. The three issues that I picked, to keep it simple, was the Illegal Alien Free Zone Act, which uses asset forfeiture take out illegal alien stuff so they don't want to live there. The second one is on full product liability on vaccine manufacturers, and the third one is an amendment to Section 230, which is the Communications Decency Act, which takes the ability of big tech to censor by putting liability back on them. And so those are the three I thought would be pretty simple to bring to Washington. But if they're talking energy, independence, and the wall and some things like that, we could easily draft some bills for those too. So this would be the first protest, ideally, of the trucker convoys that actually shows up with corrective legislation in hand. So that's really exciting. And so I'll be working with that as it goes. And so I won't be at CPAC for a bunch of reasons I talked about earlier. Never got a credential. Never was able to talk about whether I could broadcast there, and I was never able to discuss the possibility of teaching citizen legislative workshops, those are my three goals at CPAC. Jonathan Mosley is going to be there, so I'm hoping he'll be able to call in and do some reporting from there, but I won't be there this time, hopefully next time. So that's what's going on. So the truckers, I'll be working with the truckers and doing the various things there, and hopefully writing some legislation for them. Really exciting
that's
times
great.
We live in. Yeah. Now, Canada, we've got a special reporter coming. Jennifer Clark's going to call in from Ottawa at the top of the hour. So she'll be in the third hour today. You're welcome to come back if you can. Certainly listen in or catch the podcast and share that. That's going to be – I've talked to her already. She's a very interesting woman and is right there, you know, and she calls it Truckistan, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, 3 weeks in Truckistan, you know. So she's going to be a very interesting person for the show to find out what's going on. But the things that we're able to connect with now, we had Jennifer Clark calling from Canada, and Jen Clark, who called in from Australia yesterday. I mean, what are the chances? You know, they have the same name, you know, in two different countries calling the show. But I don't know if you got a chance to hear yesterday. We spent 2 hours working on an Australian Bill of Rights, and then she talked to Dr. Peter Pry about national security for Australia and the United States. It was an amazing show yesterday. And so we're breaking, you know, all kinds of new ground here all the time. And that's exciting.
That is exciting. Very
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's definitely exciting times. The Canadian situation, from my perspective, and please, you know, tell me your input there. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, I find,
happy to.
Boy, did they work very hard. But now, you know, the truckers are having their bank accounts frozen, and I don't know that anybody has gotten all that money that they were supposed to get. They took the trucks, and they seized the trucks, and they're not sure mm-hmm. if they're going to be selling the trucks off, or because they're trying to allude to the fact that they might actually, sell the trucks from the truckers of, you know, instead of giving them back after they
This is really important. I want to talk about this for a minute. Because in a normal protest, if there's a problem with a protest, if someone gets violent during a peaceful protest, you arrest them for whatever crime, assault, property damage, things like that. But that's it. You don't arrest everybody else. Okay. So in the course of a protest, a peaceful protest, if someone breaks the law, you arrest the person that broke the law. And that's the end of it. This is different. This is very much like January 6th. In other words, the people that are in jail still in the Washington, D.C. gulag are there simply because they were in the Capitol January 6th. The truckers that are having the trucks seized, they're having their insurance revoked, they're having their bank account seized. These are people that were peacefully protested, you know, with bouncy castles and barbecues, and all they wanted was to have the mandates, which were illegal in the first place, to have illegal mandates, you know, done away with, abolished, revoked. And so that's not a crime. Nothing they did was a crime. Did they block traffic? Sure they did. Lots of people have. Black Lives Matter, Antifa, you know, leftist demonstrations, truck strikes in France, you know, when they don't like the wages. You know, the truck strikes have gone on around the world since we've had trucks because they're big and they can take up a lot of space and block roads. But it's bad enough that they broke up the protest. But the real problem is they're trying to make it so nobody protests again. This is what this is.
Yeah.
Don't challenge the government. Not only are we going to prosecute you, we're going to lock up your money. We're going to take your livelihood. We're going to make it impossible for you to have a normal life, make you dependent on government so that nobody else ever does what you did. That's, I think, the real problem here. Go ahead.
I think that is exactly the real problem. So have you ever read the book The Handmaid's Tale?
No. No, okay. I have a problem reading books because I'm so ADHD. I get through three paragraphs and fall asleep. I really have to read short articles.
They have a movie and they have a series, but the series is fine, but I would just watch the movie just to get the gist of it. But the book is really fantastic. But it's really what I believe the future is becoming, which is so upsetting to me. But it's really a breakdown of they have issues with sterility, so people stop being fertile. So then, and obviously that's due to the poisons or whatever has happened, you know, in the world. And then they start trying to kind of hoard all the fertile women that they know are still fertile and basically take them because they need them for production. And in a very normal world, like this is kind of like set in the 80s, maybe the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, they basically first seize the bank accounts of the women and move the money into the man's account. That's the first thing they do, or have the man be in charge of her account. And then people try to flee
reverse
Canada.
Feminism. It's like reverse
right,
feminism.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then the military people, everybody involved in the military, they have sort of regular lives and their wives that are sterile get to stay alive and everything. They don't have to go to these camps, but the fertile women kind of become a live-in maid / sex producer for these generals and everybody. Everybody has a couple maids, and they're called handmaids.
Hmm.
And the handmaid does like all the chores, and then they have a ritualistic sexual engagement, and they basically are hopeful that the handmaid will get pregnant. And the handmaid is always it's really like slavery is what it ends up becoming. It's not the beginning of it is like seems kind of normal. Then they stop getting rid of books. They don't let you read. You have to hide magazines, and they start putting pictures on things so that like the next generation doesn't know how to read. Right.
Mm-hmm. And, like 1984. This is the same dystopian future.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes, exactly. And when I read that, it was the first book I ever read cover to cover because I don't have much patience in reading either for the most part. But it was the first book I read cover to cover. I think I was a freshman or sophomore in high school.
Hmm.
And I was like, I mean, I could read. I just didn't get interested. I would just piecemeal it or whatever. I really couldn't put this book down. And I was just like, mesmerized by the fact that this really could happen. I could really see, like, for me, it felt like a very big premonition, and it really shook me, and it intrigued me, and it shook me, and it intrigued me. And it's always been, and I've read a lot of other Margaret Atwood's books, not as good, by the way, but I kind of got interested in her, and I got interested in The Handmaid, and I watched a couple of the movies, and I definitely watched most of the series. But it's always felt to me like this was a real possibility in my lifetime. And I've always kept it in the back of my head like that, to be grateful for our freedoms. But when things like this happen with the truckers in Canada, I just like say, oh, my God, go watch the Handmaid's Tale movie or read the book, because this is very much the beginning of exactly what happens. I mean, we're having still, and then there's a couple of doctors in Canada that are in hiding, because they kind of whistle blew that the stillbirths up in Canada, which is not a big place, have doubled, tripled, 800% gone up in one hospital, and no one will talk about it. And when the doctor did talk about it, they came to his house, and they arrested him and put him in a psych ward and started giving him psychotics and other stuff that he didn't need and could also cause a stroke. And one of his doctor friends somehow got him out of the psych ward, and they are on the run. They are literally on the run. They were on InfoWars the other day. I have to find out this doctor's name. I tried to write it down because I was like, oh, this is so freaking sad. But that's the idea that the sterility thing is a big thing, and I've always felt that from the research I've done, it's a very good chance that this disease and the vaccine will have a lot of sterility issues.
That's just one of many issues that go on with this. Yeah, it's horrible. I got Justin and Pianca in the line now too. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Doctor's name. Dr. Mel, M-E-L, last name Bruchette, B-R-U-C-H-E-T, and Dr. Daniel. Dr. Bruchette is the one that was taken into as a psych ward, and Dr. Daniel is the one that popped him out, and now they're on the run from Canada trying to stay safe so that they're not captured. And this is for just revealing that the stillbirths have, 800% up. So it's so concerning, but yet in the same breath, you have to be very careful what you say. And I know I come on here and I do talk, I try not to talk too much, but especially on social media, I mean, they're tracking everything. And Canadians now that have stood up and are fighting for freedom are now losing their bank accounts and losing their rights. And I don't know how you can fight. We all don't fight back in a big, big way. I do feel like this is the start of that dystopia, because, when they have a huger hold and there's just no going back. I mean, it has to be an apocalyptic thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and this is, I'm going to get Josie in a second. Pianca, I'll work you in too. But the first thing I realized when I started studying World War II, and especially Germany, was a modern Western nation. They had some of the most advanced scientists. They had a great education system. They had democracy, and of course, I'm more of a republic person than someone who believes in democracy. But they were, and these people, and all of a sudden Hitler rises to power by election. He was elected to power, and then takes over and does all the horrendous things that led to the Holocaust, World War II, and everything else. Well, how did that happen? And Germany's like, well, I couldn't believe that would happen here. Well, it did. And as soon as I realized that it could happen in Germany, I realized that it could happen anywhere. And then it means it could happen to me. And as I'm being transferred from country to country, at the whim of my parents, from Canada to Australia to the United States, I realized that my life could be just as easily completely shattered, because it was completely shattered, where I was taken from everything I knew to everything that I to nothing that I knew, twice. So it was like, and the only thing that was common was the language, and even that had different accents. So I understood how quickly your life could change and how fortunes could change and how things were absolutely beyond your control. So it didn't surprise me when governments became tyrannical. It doesn't surprise me when the Canadian government is doing what they're doing. What surprises me is the cooperation. I understand Trudeau being a dictator. But it's the cooperation of the banks. It's the cooperation of the insurance companies. What they should be saying is, F you, we're going to keep the truckers insurance. Screw you. What are you going to do? If they bankrupt them, then they form another company or they charter it in the United States. I mean, there's so many things that they can do that they're not doing. It's the willingness of people. Every person that was told to shut down in this country and not go to work, close their companies, did, except for a few. And that's the problem. If everybody had said, screw you, we're not going to shut down, you know, that's the problem. It's the compliance.
Well,
it's the dictators and the compliance. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the compliance. But, of course, you have to realize everybody is working from a self-preservation mode. And that's the thing. We're not working in a collective mode. Everybody works in a self-serving mode. And more selfish, the higher you get, the more selfish they get.
No, but they're organized. Nazi Germany, only 2% of the Germans were Nazis in World War II. Only 2% were the Nazi Party. They controlled 98% of the other people. How? Because the 2% were organized. The government is organized. They've got the police. They've got the guns. They've got the military. They're organized. That's how they do it. And they intimidate.
Yeah.
See, people acting as individuals don't work. But you have to work individually, you know, to have a collective effect. See, that's the whole idea of Action Radio. We work individually, but the collective effect is we decide what laws we want and we send them to government and then see what government does. And if government doesn't do, then we elect a new government. See, that's the whole idea. But it's decentralized, so there's no one person doing it. Millions of people doing it. I've already thought this through. Josie, here
I know you have.
Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it. Yeah. We needed this report today, Shelby. We needed to lighten it up a little bit, so I really appreciate that, too.
Yeah, we lightened it up with boobies and beer.
Some of my favorites. There's a song in there. I'm going to have to make a theme. Boobies and beer. Yes, welcome to the Action Radio Boobies and Beer Report with Shelby Frenette.
Boobies and beer. We did have one of our one person I knew that was, having emotional, just being a real crab. And I said, you know, honestly, if you can't be happy here,
if you can't be happy with boobies and beer, then you've got more problems than we can deal with right now.
No hope. So, anyway, I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. We'll plan that Tops optional Action Radio Resort trip for the unvaxxed for you, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Shelby. Oh, if you missed Shelby's report, it was absolutely fabulous. I'm going to skip Josie's theme again in the interest of time because we have another reporter coming
on
at 8 o'clock. So let's go right to what's going on. And, Bianca, I will get to you again. Josie.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. It's a tragedy what's happening in Canada. And like you just said, the banks and the people cooperating, they're going to regret it after. Mm-hmm. But this is a dictatorship. This is like communist, because this criminal, he already, it's decided that he's going to arrest people for no reason at all. He already is making rules and laws without charging, are you guilty or not guilty? What crime did you commit it? So he's already doing it with his helper, whatever woman this lady's name is. I forgot
Chrystia Freeman. In fact, I'm going to ask Jennifer about her. Chrystia Freeman is her name. And she's the Nazi descended. And I got this from I think it was a Breitbart report on her. She's got connections to Nazi Germany through her family. She is, let me see if I get her name correctly here. Yeah, I think it's CHR. Where did I have it written down
given,
here?
So she's given all the rules ahead of time before they even arrest these people. And these people are on their knees praying. I mean, this is a dictatorship, 100% communist. Yeah.
Were you surprised?
Let me tell you, this guy,
Were you surprised by how fast this happened in Canada?
No, we knew it all along a while back.
Yeah.
Because Marisol, my girlfriend, used to live there, and her cousin lives there, and she reports to us all the time. And about 4 years ago, we removed our people that were in Canada with our churches, because they started to shut down the churches. And that's a sign of communists, because they don't want you to have churches planned. We started noticing all the changes quickly, how in control Trudeau was. And people are going along because they love him, because he's cute, he's the devil in 2 feet, and they're going to realize it, but it will be too late, because that's what happens with communists. The president from Mexico, he's another communist that the Democrats helped him to win, to have communists right on our back door. So now we're going to have communists right on our border with Mexico and Canada. It's time to get this man out from Canada. He should be in prison already a long time ago. But, you know, Biden is going to start doing the same thing with the truckers here. You watch. He's going to have the police arrest them.
Yeah. Did you talk to, did you hear our show with Bernadette and RC Pittman? I think it was last Tuesday. They came on after you.
Yeah, I was on with them, yeah.
You found them? Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just trying to remember, yeah. But they're already gearing up for that. They know it's coming because Brandon's also encouraging, Justin Castro up in Canada to do everything he's doing. So he's got the full back.
I love it.
Like, I'm Justin Castro now. Well, you're the one that started me on this. And I looked up and, everybody else is saying it too. Tucker Carlson called him Justin Castro Trudeau. So I figured, it's pretty mainstream now, yeah. But that's so he's obviously connected to the World Economic Forum, to Klaus Schwab and the whole bit. I've got some interesting things. Jen Clark yesterday mentioned this, the Melbourne experiment. I've got a UN paper on that. And it's interesting that COVID really is their social experimentation form. It's their way to get to sustainable development. You know, and they got like 17 goals, which I was going to go over this morning, but we got Rick called from New Jersey, and then we got off on a tangent, but I'll look at that tomorrow. But COVID's really a giant social experiment. It's a giant experiment in what government can get away with. And as I said to Shelby, I am not surprised that the government is doing this. What I'm surprised at is the rate of compliance. And the amount of compliance that's going along with it so easily. You know, like I said, when DeSantis ordered that stay-at-home order, I went out driving with my windows down singing country music out the window. I said, screw you, I'm not going to stay home. You can't tell me to stay home. You know, so that was an open act. Now, if everybody else had sung country music out the radio, first of all, it would have sounded bad. But the point was, open defiance is the way that you deal with these things. You know, as psychosis. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, Greg, when Ron DeSantis closed the parks, closed the beach, closed everything, we were still going to Wahoo Park to do Zumba outside, and they shut down all the bathrooms and everything outside. So some of the girls were peeing in the bushes because, you know, drinking so much water, dancing Zumba, you know. But
I don't know, I've never danced Zumba, but I'm willing to try, you know, but you'll see how much. That's Zumba with a bunch of women. Yeah, I'm there. I'm still back with Shelby's boobies and beer. So you know,
it's
an interesting day.
But you know, it was sad to see young women in America peeing in the bushes. I felt like I was back in Nicaragua.
Oh yeah, that is you know, and think about that for a second. That they closed the bathrooms. I mean, what kind of depraved government policy? What kind of police force you know does that? That it closes the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the other thing too. Yeah. We have a person here who's done a public video, so I can mention his name, Larry Downs Jr., who's been on the show. Larry Downs Jr. is a plumber. He's in Pensacola, and he put a public video up of where he had his family, and they have two boats. So they put these boats together, and Fish and Game comes up. And says, you can't have your boats together. You have to stay 6 feet apart and all this other stuff. He's like, why? We're out in the fresh air. We're out in the sunshine. What's going on? What do you mean? Well, you have to. I said, why? Well, we have a mandate. Well, why? What law are you talking about? Well, it's not a law. Well, so in other words, then you can't do it. You know, you can't just make up stuff. And he says, and then the officer actually said, it's on tape, we're just following orders. You know, and that comes right out of the Nuremberg Nazi trials. That's always the excuse. That's like the pharmacist in that CVS video
who was
giving away, who was vaccinating people that didn't know what was in the insert. Well, I'm just following orders. So the company told me to do this. This compliance, and we talked about it earlier. If you caught the earlier part of the show, when Rick called from New Jersey, the Prussian model of education is based on indoctrinating people to just follow orders. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So again, the only way to a free country is to get rid of your government schools. But yeah, so but just following orders. That's what, and they think they can buy their security by compliance with tyranny, and it doesn't work. It just doesn't.
And Greg, I was listening to one of the reporters from Mexico. They have stolen all his equipment and everything at the border. You know, Oscar de Blue. But he was explaining in Spanish to a lot of people because a lot of the Spanish people get very angry when we call the illegals illegals. And he was going step by step explaining why we call them illegals, because they're breaking the law. And he's going on and on and on and on. But, you know, Joe Biden wants to remove the word illegal from our
Senate. His government policy now, there's an order on that. They can't say illegal aliens. So we're going to say it. Illegal aliens. That's what they are.
And the reason is he wants to remove that word. He wants to remove for us to be saying illegals because he wants to release a lot of the prisoners. And, you know, if you're saying illegal, and you know, he's mentally ill. But, of course, it's not It's not Joe Biden running the show, we said again. It's Obama running the show in this country.
Yeah. Well, Obama and Hillary,
radical,
I talked to that.
Criminals.
Bianca, your line's live if you want to join us here. So feel free, but yeah.
Good morning, Bianca.
Good morning, Josie. You know, that's called the happy bush when you go into the bushes and pee. It's the happy bush.
I figure
I got to go
to
the happy bush. I'll have to use that one.
Yeah.
Like that. I got to go to the
that's
happy
bush. That's what we
bush.
Call okay, it fine. In Africa. But the thing is that the companies that's engaging in these attacks on these truckers, canceling their insurance, seizing their bank account, we need to know who these companies are so we can boycott them.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Companies here, Canadian companies that's doing business in the United States, either in selling product or service business, like I said, insurance, we need to know who they are so we can boycott them. Don't spend money with them.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I would say publicly shame them. They should have a corporate hall of shame. We actually had that in Washington when I was an intern. It was called Big Business Day, where the liberals, you know, they shamed all the big businesses that were treating their workers horribly, that were gouging prices, polluting the environment, all kinds of nasty things that corporations do. And that's why their regulations, good regulations, stop corporations from doing bad things. Bad regulations stop corporations from doing anything. You know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. But it wouldn't be. But you see, the conservatives, they don't do that. They're going to go to CPAC and they're going to congratulate themselves for how well they can complain about the problems. You know, and that's what conservatives do. They reward themselves for being good complainers about the problems, but they don't offer solutions, yet we have them here. And this is the ultimate irony. Why we're not national among the conservatives, why we're not, you know, being featured at CPAC, considering the work that we do here, the ideas, the creativity, the things that we can do to totally turn, you know, conservative activism around and make it a powerful force in this country. You know, individual action with a cumulative effect. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I honestly don't. Mm-hmm. We're here.
And you know, Greg,
we got the answers. What's the problem?
Once the truck starts, Biden is going to follow suit with Canada. You know, they're criminals. Mm-hmm. He's going to try. Well, he's going to try, but we're not going to let him. Oh, no.
Well, he's
we're
already
totally
barricaded
different.
They're barricading in the Capitol. You know, and it's no accident that the State of the Union speech is going to take place right before, you know, the well, let me see. Wait, let me look at my calendar. So next week's calendar is, I guess it's March. What's the last day of February? All right, Sunday's the 27th. So March, Tuesday, March 1st. That's when, so the State of the Union is the same day that the convoy leaves California. Gee, that's not a coincidence. And Washington's already barricaded, you know, and they, that way they can say, well, we just had the troops there to protect the president for the State of the Union. Well, you know, the people of this country don't want to attack the Capitol. We just want to remove the coup. You know, so that's, that we're not going to attack a building. You know, we're going to make our state legislators recall Brandon and cancel him, you know, disqualify him. So that's where the fight is. It's not in Washington. It's in the state legislatures right now. But these idiots, you know, they think they're so important. They're just going to barricade themselves in. You know, and then Brandon's going to make some, you know, speech when he's up on amphetamines or whatever else they shoot him up on so he can stand up for 2 hours. You know, it's crazy. Does anybody know? Anybody got any idea what kind of medications he goes on before he appears in public? It's got to be something strong.
Dementia medication.
Yeah.
He has dementia, you know.
Yeah.
Ask your
folks in health. You know, if you get a chance to ask the people, you know, in the health services field, what drugs might be used to prop up somebody with dementia so they can sound lucid for an hour and a half for a speech? I'd be curious. I mean, are there drugs that do that? Temporary sanity, you know, by chemical?
I don't know. I don't know. He looked like a puppet to me. I don't know.
Well, let me look it up right now. I'm going to look it up right now. You, so feel free to chat more about this.
You know, Greg? This guy was in the basement for so long, he couldn't hardly walk. He couldn't hardly do anything. He was so mentally ill, sick. And all of a sudden, they revived him. So I don't know. I don't know. And even Donald Trump says, that's not Joe Biden. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know who he is. You know how they make those masks nowadays.
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely Joe Biden. Here we go. Alzheimer's drugs help manage symptoms. Sudden signs of dementia could be temporary. Dementia treatment and drugs to offset symptoms. Here we go. AARP. Oh, yeah. So the American Association of Retired Liberal People, Dementia Treatment Options, Old Medicines, New Hope. And let's see what they say here. I haven't even read the article. Oh, it's, they have a Spanish version, too. Yeah, let's see. To the compounding there's no cure, no new treatments since her. Researchers believe that we will not only see new treatments in the near future, but also new diagnostic approaches. Okay, what are the drugs? What are they giving them here?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reading quickly here. Cholinesterase inhibitors and NMDA receptor. I'm gonna have to read this over. apparently there are drugs that temporarily hide the symptoms of Alzheimer's. Then they have a third treatment. I'll post this. We'll look at it later. But yeah, it looks like. So this is right here. Old medications, new hope. There's no cure and few medications are approved, but researchers believe those drugs could work better if we catch the disaster earlier. Okay, yeah, maybe this is not quite right. Mm-hmm. But somebody who knows chemistry and medicine, let us know. What do you shoot somebody up with so they can speak for a couple hours?
It could be like bipolar medicine, because if my sister doesn't take that medicine for bipolar, she talks nonstop like a parrot, and she will not let you talk.
Mm.
But when she takes the medicine calms her down so she can listen to people and talk like normal, So I'm sure they have this type of medication for Alzheimer's, or especially him, that he's the president, to wake him up. I don't know what they pump in there right before any interview or anything like that. And a lot of times he looks like he's falling asleep,
So, we fall asleep when he's just his regular.
Well,
go ahead, Jackie.
Canada's always says that Joe Biden should invade Canada, being that the citizens are being genocidal, tortured. And I think that was a good idea. You invade the Ukraine, you want to protect their citizens.
Right. That's an interesting thought. Well, you think we should invade Canada to save Canada from Trudeau?
Yes. You need to ask him to step down. Remember when Obama became president, he asked several presidents to step down. He asked Laurent Gbagbo of Cote d'Ivoire. He asked Mubarak of Egypt. He asked Al-Fayed in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. Well, let's get to the president's daily brief. We haven't done that yet. Looks like they're receiving their daily briefing at 10:15. So I guess Kamala Harris, the party girl, slept her way to the top. She's back from nearly causing a Ukraine war. I didn't know she was back already.
And
the press briefings
and
at 2.
Kamala wears that mask all the time because she can hardly stop laughing. Because she don't know how to talk serious. She's like a clown. She's the clown show of the Democrats. She has that mask, and you can hear the tone of her voice in her serious question, and she starts talking, and you could hear that she wants to laugh out of control. She's
an idiot.
Well,
everything's funny to her.
That
she
woman
can't take anything
idiot.
Seriously. She is an idiot, yeah. So the one event they're actually hosting today is a virtual event. This is the White House announcing progress on securing critical mineral supply chains. I guess that's the stuff they need for solar batteries and stuff, powering clean energy manufacturing and creating good-paying jobs. Well, first of all, the government doesn't create good-paying jobs because they can't. Government can't create anything. But they've got a clean energy summit, and they've got this creating good-paying jobs. And this is Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm, National Climate Advisor. Mm-hmm. Did you know we have a National Climate Advisor? Gina McCarthy, Deputy Secretary of Defense. Wait a minute, what's the Defense Secretary doing on an energy summit? All right, Kathleen Hicks and California Governor Gavin Newsom, who is Nancy Pelosi's nephew, are attending. And that is the sole event that is taking place today in the the White House occupied by
Britain.
Yeah, I can put you guys on hold for a little bit. I got my guest from Canada, Jennifer Clark's calling in.
Can
I ask a couple things before we start? Yeah, go ahead real quickly. Yeah, I wanted to know, Josie. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah,
Josie, they have Kamala Harris wired up with a wireless remote control tickler.
What?
No, I think they got that to Joe Biden. that's not Joe Biden.
As we lose the serious portion of the program again, see you guys. All right, we'll play a couple things, and I'm going to get to Jennifer Clark, and we're going to hear about the real situation from Ottawa, from someone who's right there. So hang on, you two. You can stay for the rest of the show, as always, and I'll be right back in about 3 minutes.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Okay, we got lucky again through friends of friends and connections. I became acquainted with Jennifer Clark, who's on the ground, and she calls it Truckistan in Ottawa. And I want to hear the whole story. So first of all, give her a round of applause. And welcome, Jennifer, to Action Radio. And I'm just going to let you go. So tell us a bit about yourself, and then just I want to hear the whole story, you know, from as much as you want to tell, from the beginnings of the convoy to where we are now. And first of all, welcome to Action Radio, and thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. And again, I don't deserve the applause. I am just one sovereign human living in Ottawa. There are
yes,
millions
you do.
Of us, you know.
I'll give you another one. Yes, you do.
You know, I appreciate it, but you know, we're living a time where everybody has to do something. Like this is no longer about a jab or this or that. This is Canada is falling, and it's quite it's overwhelming for me. I'm a first generation Canadian. My grandfather fought in the resistance on the island of Crete.
Oh wow.
you know, as a younger man, just sort of telling us stories, not so much about, you know, they had it bad because it was an island, right? So resources were controlled, food, shelter, that kind of thing. And they had to sort of operate in secret. You know, we would hear the stories, but it was more about, you know, love your country, love your family, do the good thing, right? You know, as an immigrant coming, you know, into North America. And this is where it's hard. You know, I went to university. I studied political science. I actually went to school with a lot of the people we're talking about. In Ottawa, it's only 1 million people. So it's a small town. And, you know, our social circles, you know, bumped into each other. Certainly there was, like every political capital, there's a divide based on your color. So the red are the liberals, which are your Democrats. The blues are the conservatives, which are your Republicans. And so there's definitely, you know, lines drawn socially and, you know, different political parties operating at economically. There was power structures in Ottawa. Then there's the regular Joe or Jane that just wasn't part of it and just, you know, lived in a beautiful – we have a lot of nature, there's low crime, you know, like it's a great town. I can walk downtown, you know, at 3 a.m. as a woman and not worry like one iota. And,
wow.
You know, we have a lot of beautiful physical architecture. People come here, it's a tourist destination place. And I just say this because, you know, the mass psychosis, all I can say is the WEF did a great job. That, you know,
yeah,
I applaud
don't talk about that.
For using all the tools, the psyops, you know, all the machinations out of their playbook have been executed. And as someone who's in media and someone who has a background in political science, who actually truly understands the definition of fascism, so this weekend was terrible. Like, we're in shock. Average Canadians who Justice McLean had said previously that this was a peaceful protest and the trucks were allowed to be there. He just said, stop honking your horns. You know, you're disturbing the local residents. And that was where Justice McLean sort of ended it. The former chief slowly said, yes, you know, they have a right to protest, and he was trying to sort of balance the needs of the mayor and the constituents in those ridings. Frankly, the horns were terrible. Like, it was terrible. The truckers really did make a strategic error. I understand why they wanted to get people's attention, but they already had their attention. So the horns that were blaring for, you know, 7 a.m. to midnight, they turned the local residents against them. And that's where I think was a major misstep because that then ignited the Mayor Watson, Ottawa Mayor Watson, to take the GoFundMe, you know, money to then disturb the military and to sort of incite our premier, Doug Ford, to enact emergency measures. Despite the local truckers' efforts at cleaning the streets and feeding the homeless, and you know, crime was down 90% in town, and the homeless were fed. There was food every two blocks. There was a camp. I don't know if you've ever been to Burning Man. It was kind of a very similar setup, where, you know, the truckers had made camps at every two blocks. And I'm talking, they had everything from a barbecue, you know, a spit, to a woman making 1,000 plates of pasta that she froze and brought with her.
Did they bring all the – they brought stoves and barbecues and ovens and cooking
things?
Oh,
they were ready. They were ready. I mean, truckers in general are very humble, good people who are resourceful.
Yeah.
I've really never met a trucker I didn't like. They're on the road. They're used to, you know, self-sufficiency. But what's happened is a great divide on class. So I am disgusted by my peers. I have, it's called the Great Unfriending here in Ottawa, where,
wow,
you know, I think I've lost 500 friends in a week, because I have spoken on Parliament Hill 3 times, in front of thousands of people saying this is fascism. You know, when a government, restricts free thinking, controls the media, prevents us from peaceful assembly, prevents the doctors from speaking out and offering an alternative position to the positive effects of a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
When everything is controlled, you know, we're in a fascist state. We're in a police state. So unfortunately, Canadians, post World War II, we have benefited greatly from the efforts of our grandfathers, and we don't have revolutions. We don't have a huge, I mean, there's racism everywhere, don't get me wrong. We have our mm-hmm. issues, but we don't have the riotousness, right? Like, I don't even know when the last major event was, perhaps was the FLQ crisis in the 60s. I don't even know. Certainly our Indigenous Native population knows more about this. They've had to, you know, fight the government for centuries for land rights, water rights, clean drinking water, you know, all kinds of things. So that mm-hmm. population definitely knows that the government has had agendas. And then recently, you know, they discovered 7,000 bodies of children in residential schools that were hidden by the Catholic Church, the Canadian government at the time, that they were just buried, right? And shockingly, our current government didn't really make a big feel about it. As a citizen of Canada, I was like, wow, this is our mark. This is our stain. This is our Germany. Like, what have we done?
Are these
our
orphans
people?
Or these were kids that just
no,
disappeared?
No, so basically back in the 40s to the 60s, or probably even earlier, Aboriginal people were rounded up. I'm sorry.
Oh, these are,
call
okay.
them now. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah, so our Indigenous Native population was rounded up by the, you know, the governments of the time, the churches of the time. You're a savage, you know, your language is, you don't know what you do, you don't know anything. Come into
right.
the schools, we're going to teach you English, we're going to punish you for speaking your native language, your way of living is wrong, we're more educated, you know, it's colonialism, like they just co-opted it, but they forced, like they were forcing families, taking children, taking people by force, and then in those schools, they're called residential schools, were killing the children and burying
wow.
the bodies secretly. So there's graves now being found in all across Canada. Current count is 7,000. 7,000 children. And there was big protests of like shoes. You would see shoes in front of the Eternal Flame and shoes in front of schools and shoes. The Catholic school board put their flags at half mast as a sign of, you know, contrition. But even on Reconciliation Day, our Prime Minister went to Tofino surfing. So Tofino is a popular West Coast surf town.
No, Reconciliation Day.
So Reconciliation Day was the Canadian government's attempt to say sorry for
okay.
the crimes of their previous predecessors regarding the Indigenous genocide.
Got it.
So did you see anywhere, like if I'm telling you this and you don't know this, as an educated American,
yeah.
it tells me that the human rights weren't really communicated, right? Like the world didn't take, like if you saw 7,000 children found dead in any country of the world, this should be on mainstream news.
Mm-hmm.
This should be across the board, you know, a headline. Well, it was here in Canada for a couple of days, but then it didn't. And I'm only raising this is because it speaks to the culture of our current regime. And I voted for this gentleman, Mr. Trudeau. We had a conservative prime minister. Now, let me just declare, most Canadians are liberal, which would be Democrat. So
okay.
most, and I'm not saying everybody, but certainly the general population is more middle road libertarian. That's how we were raised. We get freaked out around guns, generally speaking. Again, not the average Canadian. I'm not talking about people who grew up differently in different sections of the population. I can't generalize 30 million people, but certainly the average Canadian is like peace and love and like do the right thing, follow the rules, democracy, you know, will work, trust your police officer, trust your government elected officials, trust the process. So, you know, it started to, when we had Mr. Harper in, people were just so sick of that kind of leadership, they just ran to young Trudeau. And again, sunny skies, he was young and his family was beautiful. Everyone wanted to be them, around them, you know.
Your Bill Clinton.
Thinking that there
was
hope,
he was your Bill Clinton.
Right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. And then, I mean, again, I think he did well for a couple, you know, years, and then not so much. So I'm not sure when he graduated from the Klaus Schwab School of, you know, the
fascism.
Great Reset, but
yeah, exactly.
So, he was doing that behind the scenes. I mean, obviously his critics were on him from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But we had come out from such a sort of a conservative, again, no disrespect to your scholars, Republican.
No, don't worry about it. No, you can
like,
speak freely here. We disagree constantly on this show, and that's not a problem. I don't consider myself
just
a conservative.
Yeah,
I'm a constitutional independent.
Speaking from
speak freely.
So
yeah.
I was a card-carrying liberal Democrat. Until today, until 2 years ago.
Wow.
So, you know, it was hope that turned into something sour, and then how he handled the 7,000 children thing was just genocide. It's just strictly genocide, and, you know, they didn't really acknowledge it. They didn't really do anything. I mean, they don't get me wrong. They have a lot of money to rectify things, but, I mean, money can't replace the trauma. And then you started hearing, you know, this thing called COVID. And it is a thing. I'm not trying to say it's not. So let me just – my position is it is something very serious, but I truly personally believe it was lab-created, launched into the world for some kind of nefarious reasons. I have my theories.
I'd love to hear them.
Pretty down.
Don't be afraid to
share
them.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, well, at this point,
you
know, where I'm at is, again, I have a public persona here in Ottawa. I've taken a lot of hits publicly for stepping out, speaking out.
Okay.
I'm not here ever to tell someone what to think. Like, if you can read, you can figure it out. And this is what's shocking to me is the mass psychosis, where I'm going with this is taking the long way around the lake.
No.
The
makes perfect
the
sense to me so far.
Campaigns, the psychosis, Mr. McDonald's mass psychosis spell theory, even the military, the Canadian military confirmed in the Ottawa Citizen, the main paper here in the nation's capital, that they used psychological warfare against its own people as an experiment. And yet it was a tiny byline, an article that didn't really get much traction. And I'm like, why aren't we caring about this? And then you find out that the Trudeau Foundation has money in Actuarius, which is the BC technology that so they get a percentage of every COVID vaccine bought, sent, injected. Then you find out that Premier Ford's family company makes the labels of every bottle. Then you find out that the College of Surgeons and like our AMA said no doctors allowed to talk against it. So early on, you had the pediatrician saying, what are we doing? Like, you don't mask a child. What are we doing? You don't inject a child. They're 99%, you know, like survivable. They're not at risk. They were censured right away, like your American doctors, they were censured. And so you started seeing articles about mental health, and you started seeing articles from pediatricians sending out the warning bell, especially around the children. And I'm a mom, so, you know, I read that really closely. And then all of a sudden you saw nothing. And it was like, you know, conform, do not question. So early on, it became a problem to criticize the government. Pretty much all three major parties, so we have a three-party system here, all agreed for a national vaccine passport. Now, as of 1996, the official website of the Canadian government said that we're not mandating national vaccines. Like, that this is not our policy, it's choice, and, you know, freedom of medical autonomy was part of the Constitution Bill of Rights. Well, that website changed. I would say 6 months into year one. Then the definition of a vaccine changed and included mRNA. And I'm like, why does a vaccine – so the word vaccine is supposed to be global, right? Like, there are all kinds of vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the definition of vaccine on Canadian government sites was included mRNA. And I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting. Then you see RIFDs, which are requests from Canadian government for tenders for tear gas, masks, body bags, what was the other one? Communications companies to offer intel on users' named phone numbers, like information from their users.
Mm-hmm.
And banks, people are like, right. I mean, Statistics
right.
Canada is actually doing that now, is they're taking, I think, 500,000 people's information without their consent and giving it back to, well, the government, which is still Statistics Canada, and they claim it's for marketing purposes.
The euphemism du jour. Yeah. You know what else changed was
right.
herd immunity.
So,
herd immunity was another definition that changed. It used to
right.
be,
so,
natural. Now it's only by vaccine can you achieve any kind of immunity. So that's World Health Organization. They changed too, but they're in this as well. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
This is great.
That's right. Well, yeah, it started to change everywhere, right?
Uh-huh.
And then the line that we were shoved down our throats is we need herd immunity. Well, we reached herd immunity year one.
Uh-huh.
Because the average Canadian is a good person. Again, they want to do the right thing. The mask was something that you were supposed to do to help someone else feel safe. Not that I agree with this. Like, I don't buy into that. I'm just saying that the psychology was, if you don't wear a mask, you're not protecting me and you're a bad person.
Right.
So, again, that was the psychology that's still prevalent. So now the resistance, so the counterculture movement, is Canadians in Ottawa are now wearing masks outside as a statement to say, screw you to the truckers. And
oh.
So you see them, they're walking down the street by themselves, there's no one around them, and wearing masks.
Are they
and
paid?
I'm like, wow.
Are they paid by the government to do this, or is it organized
no,
or what?
No. Like, no, I'm not kidding
really?
You. They junk the juice. Psychological warfare has achieved critical mass
psychosis.
Anytime I was afraid downtown, so I was early on, like, I'm a poli sci grad, I'm a risk manager, I'm a mom, I'm like, okay, my income was reduced by 90% because of lockdowns. I have natural immunity, I believe in natural immunity. I was vilified, told you can't come to Christmas, neighbors shunning you, I'm not allowed to go to a restaurant, I'm not allowed to go to church or to a gym, just like, in the States and lots of other countries. So for me, it was worth my autonomy, it was worth my health to do that. And people say it's a choice, but I challenge them saying, well, coercion is not a choice, and having a two-tiered system is not a choice. It's not something that I believe in. So the problem is in Canada right now, and I think I speak for most of the 7 million people that the truckers represented, was that a two-tiered system is wrong, inherently un-Canadian and undemocratic, and we haven't had a vote necessarily on it, a public vote. You had different pockets of resistance, and there's mothers groups, there's the anti-vax groups the anti-vax language was part of the narrative used against us. So I have vaccines. I have all the vaccines for polio, rubella. My kid has all the vaccines for the regular, diseases. But I just, as an individual, do not believe that I'm at risk. And nor do I believe Mr. Fauci, who really, really fucked up the world. Because somehow this one asshole has made laws happen around the world. And I'm like, at first he says the masks don't work anyway, the cloth masks won't prevent the oil-based whatever. And then he says, you know, wear them. And it's like everyone ran with it. And it's tragic that children in Canada, and I'm sure around the world, in kindergarten, they're not learning speech properly. They're not seeing words. They're not seeing faces. You know, you see teachers going into schools with double masks and these shields on. I get chastised all the time because the rules for the school are if you're on school property, you have to wear a mask. I purposely stand off school property. On my, like, I live 2 doors down from my school. I stand on my neighbor's lawn. I get yelled at by the teachers that I'm on school property. I said, no, I'm not. I'm on my friend's lawn. Just send me my kid. And it's a battle every day for those people who actually don't wear a mask at all. It's tragic, as you well can appreciate, for the children to learn with a mask. Like, you can't see,
well,
you know,
child abuse.
Lots of things happening.
It's government child abuse,
so,
pure and simple. Yeah.
So, anyways, people drunk the Kool-Aid, even though people have proven that the actual mask doesn't prevent the molecule, people say, again, if you ask someone today, it's the right thing to do. They regurgitate the fascist narrative. It's the right thing to do. And I'm like, oh, really? Is it, though? So I created Free in the 613, a freedom group for people who have my mindset to find help, friends. And, you know, Christmas this year was really, really hard. They told people do not they limited the number of people you could have at your home. They told people to report, like, narc on your friends, like call bylaw if there was more people. We need to we all need to work together. We're all in this together. So I early on
said
we're not
thing.
In this together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not in this together.
Not.
You're not paying my bills. You're not paying my bills. Like, so the people who say that are vaccinated, have access to the world, and wonder why we're upset. And to this day, even though there was massive police brutality in Ottawa, I am disgusted. I am people died at the peaceful protests. One moment, our Mayor Watson says this is a friggin' bouncy castle carnival, and the next day it's a terrorist insurgent. And you have city councilors across the board looking for blood, wanting the army to move in and physically cause harm, and they were evoking very strong language, terrorist insurgents. Now, I've seen, you know, videos and of riots. There was never there was unfortunately a lot of so you get a million people in one room, you throw a party. Think of a house party in high school. Not
right.
Everybody is gonna respect mom's china, or, you know, oops, spilt the wine on the floor. Again, what didn't happen well was the collective leadership of the truckers convoy did not have enough resources to work locally well, meaning they didn't have a professional PR strategist. They didn't have a social media representative. They weren't putting out the fires as quickly as they should have locally. Had they done that in Ottawa, I guarantee you the response would have been different. They just pissed off the 100 people living downtown. They pissed off, let's say, the rest of Ottawa, who was watching CTV, CBC, and Global News, who are all corporate interfered with, like legacy media, and didn't take the time to go down and talk to them or meet them, which I did. And
what'd you find?
It created too much of, I've said this a million times. I will say this. In fact, I'm creating a website called Humans of Truckistan to actually send love letters to the truckers, to post the pictures that I witnessed of children playing in the street, people singing and laughing, music, good people, good men standing up for their country, good women, either there on site or women who left them at home, you know, taking care of their homes while they're here. at great cost. These were not rich people. It became a tragic war of the classes, blue collar versus white collar. Ottawa is white collar, academic, where the nation's capital. Think of Washington, you know,
right,
versus any other place.
But they told us, but Jennifer, they told us, workers world unite, and we did. This is what happened.
Right, right.
It's
well,
the ultimate
the
irony.
The thing is, there was a narrative, though, early on saying, you know, the truckers who were working, got mad at the truckers who weren't working. And that became sort of the viral anti or counter argument. Thank the trucker that's still bringing your food to your grocery store, which, don't get me wrong, I thank all truckers. I thank all farmers, all truckers, you know, all bodies that support the society moving forward. But that became the narrative, is like these yahoos in town who've left their families, who are blocking our roads, are not the ones we're supposed to thank. So again, it became an anti-trucker thing from the truckers. And I'm not saying that was every trucker, but again, you get one meme that goes viral on social media, and that becomes the narrative. My friends and colleagues were saying, has Duck Dynasty ended yet? You know, send the hillbillies home.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you. Like, this is, like, even after the brutality, I had, I was in media. So I have a colleague in a prominent radio station downtown saying, I have been co-opted. Jennifer, you've been co-opted by hate groups. You're not supporting democracy. You're a fascist. And they get what they deserve. They were told to leave. And I'm like, so Canadians in general wouldn't condone, again, I can't speak for all Canadians, right? So I'm talking about the average libertarian, liberally minded, democratic citizen of Canada would not condone any violence anywhere, right? We believe in a justice system. If you've done wrong, you know, you're going to go to court, you're going to get punished, and that's it. We don't believe in corporal punishment necessarily, the death penalty necessarily, or beating on, you know, retribution, like physical retribution. It's not the general temperament of Canada. All of a sudden, that changed.
Mm-hmm.
That changed when you saw mounted police on horses, you saw UN military,
UN? We don't see the UN
the
news
was
shows.
Here.
Okay, let's hear about that.
Yeah. No.
All right.
They were for sure here. And
okay.
So that's why I'm trying to do the humans of Truckistan. It's going to go like the good, the bad, the ugly. And the ugly being this stuff we're talking about right now, to say, look, guys, I was there. I was on the ground, you know, watching how the veterans were pulled off by police off of the tomb of the unknown soldier. They were actually protecting the tomb of the unknown soldier. They threw down a 9-year-old man with medals across his chest like crazy. There was so much gold on that guy. It was like he could have been a Fort Knox for all I know. They had them in on their knees, you know, like execution style, like arms.
Oh, yeah, 90-year-old guy
like,
on his knees.
On
yeah, the whole, yeah, the hand behind the head
right.
thing. Yeah.
The veterans
90-year-old.
Are crying.
Wow.
Yeah, they're crying. The young men are crying from Afghanistan. The old guys are crying because they know it's their citizens doing this to them. They were there in the snow for 2 hours. 2 hours. Then the CTV news crew shows up, films it. They get their photo op. The gentlemen were taken in a truck, in a bus, and deposited about 20 kilometers away. Released without being arrested because they couldn't be arrested.
That was off of the cameras.
So all the arrests you hear about, there is no law on the books. Justice McLean always said that this was a peaceful protest. You cannot have bouncy castles and people singing like Kumbaya, Love, Peace, and Harmony in O Canada and then having it as a terrorist insurgent. But
tell
that's
about
what
Justice
happened is...
Yeah. Justice McLean, I'm not familiar with him. What's his job? And then I want to find out what CTV
is. He was a judge. So Chinese national living in Canada, a woman, made a petition to the court to say, hey, there's too much noise. Stop it. And it got through the system. First of all, we're all shocked that one individual could do that when millions of us have been trying, you know, to work through the legal system on other issues. We were shocked that this one young woman, 24-year-old woman, Anyway, so Justice McLean ruled. He was the judge that ruled on the noise complaint. And he said the truckers have a right for peaceful assembly, but not the noise. So basically the horn stopped at week two. And in the citizen's defense, the noise was terrible. It really was terrible. It was like
You inconvenience people, you block highways, you know, women have to give birth on the freeway because, you know, the ambulance can't get through or whatever. And all these things are happening, you know, and medical horrible things happen and police can't get through and, you know, fire departments can't get through and houses burn. If you inconvenience people to a certain point, you lose your cause. And this is the first rule of protesting.
Right. And that's where they missed.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
But they didn't, though. So in their defense, there was always pathways. They didn't block that. So that didn't happen.
Okay.
There was one report of a gentleman that was having a heart attack in an ambulance, and they had a hard time getting through the protesters. That's still the problem is we have no verifiable – I cannot trust the media. So personally, right. I do not trust the CBC. I don't trust CTV, Global News, Bell. They're all owned by the same owners. And if you actually saw them curating the narrative, they weren't objective. They weren't objective. The New York Times, this is what really burned my ass. The New York Times called a friend of mine who lives downtown. She's triple vaxxed, rich, white, and she was bemoaning that she was on occupied territory. They never went to her neighbor who wrote a blog. He was a scientist who worked for the government of Canada, saying, I appreciate the truckers for being here. In fact, the truckers gathered.
He wrote that blog and it wasn't published. I'm not quite sure what the trucker connection is. Say that again.
So he lived beside her. So you can have in an apartment building overlooking Wellington Street. My friend living in apartment one, mad.
Right.
Mr. Mayberry, Daniel Mayberry, you can Google it. It's a viral blog. He says,
okay.
You know what? I'm going to go outside and talk to these guys. And he changed his mind. He's like, these are peaceful people. They have a valid reason to be there. They have the right to protest, blah, blah, blah. So what I'm saying is even the New York Times that you would think has
no, we
like,
wouldn't. Not anymore.
The alternative
we
view.
Don't think that.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. It's like you didn't get the alternative, right? And when Global News, CTV, CBC was interviewing, God bless them, they picked the most hillbilly trucker they could find.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, media, it's a game, right? It's all about appearance. It's about language. It's about vernacular. It's about acumen. And unfortunately...
Propaganda. Don't forget propaganda.
There's
a message. There's an agenda.
Sure. They perpetuated the Duck Dynasty mindset that I abhorrently, it disgusts me. Canadians know better because these are the guys that are going to be fighting on the front line. If this was the 1940s, these were the guys who signed up willingly, and the rich kids were the ones being hidden by their parents. And Ottawa is divided. It's been divided before, so this is not something new. It was divided by class. It was divided by politics. And it is a disgusting place to be when you see a massive overreach of, overkill. Like, they had snipers. They had every officer on the second line had rubber bullet rifles.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone with a camera was a target.
We've seen that on our news. Tucker Carlson on Fox was talking about the various people that the cameras were shut down. The police were seizing cameras. The police don't have body cams like most of our police do now. So they wanted to, whatever they wanted to do, it's just like China. They wanted to cover it up completely. I want to ask you about the police in a bit, but let's talk about cameras
first of all.
There's
a video of a beautiful white blonde woman. So typical, let's play the narrative, the racist Aryan narrative. She was a typical blonde, beautiful white woman from Rebel News. Had a microphone, an official microphone video. She's two back. She's like the front line were men. She was behind the men. The police were advancing. And a guy sees her, punches her with the baton with the spike, I don't know what they're called, bats, hits her in the face, then shoots a rubber bullet at her leg and takes her down. And you hear the scream, her scream, but you hear the people around them, because up to this point, they were advancing physically without force. And
right.
It's because she had a camera. She had her camera. And then the most classic one, which I hope the Mohawk Nation does something about, because I've been praying for a hero. I've been praying, like, the heroes came. Don't get me wrong. The truckers came. Like, they showed up. They definitely showed up. But now the force was brutal. People were harassed in the red zone. You're not allowed to walk down the street. A member of parliament was arrested because he was trying to get to parliament. And they said, sir, we have to arrest you. And he's like, you cannot arrest me. I'm a member of parliament going to my job. They said, you're in the red zone under emergency measures. They arrest him. Then he said, I'm a veteran. I can't believe you guys are doing this to me. And you could sort of hear the voices soften a bit. Then there was a woman from Alberta wearing, unfortunately, anyone who looked like a trucker was a target on day two of the siege. If you dressed a certain way, what's your name? Where do you live? Get out of the red zone. Lady's like, I'm trying to get a coffee. No. Why is your camera on? He slaps the camera, throws her on the ground. She's crying. And she's like, I'm afraid. And he, like, hauls her, like, very sort of gruffly and says, get out of here or you're going to get arrested. And she was just trying to get a coffee.
How big is this
red
zone?
When there was no truckers, when there was no truck, like, so by this day two of the red zone, there was nobody. They had cleared out the town. Then they started harassing businesses that were open. So now live feeds coming in again. A business that was on Bank Street was open. There's 10 cops banging on the window. He's like, I'm not opening up. You know, what's the law I'm breaking? It's emergency measures. You're in the red zone. You've got to close. He refuses. It's all on live feeds. Like, there were three live feeds going at the same time where you're watching this happen in real time. And the guy's resisting, and he's like, sorry, you know, like, my constitutional right. He gets a $2,000 fine.
Wow.
Now, the fines are being thrown out. This is what's interesting. Businesses were always allowed to open by law. The mandates said not to. So what was interesting, people who know the law were saying, hey, take the ticket, take the heat, go to court, court's going to throw it out. Because there's no law on the books to say this is illegal. Unfortunately, again, Canadians play by the rules. We don't want hassles. We don't want, you know, bad press. And so restaurants, you know, were closed during lockdowns, or restaurants were asking for fast passports, which, again, is illegal according to our still constitution. And then I had friends. Again, I grew up middle class, but I went to school with upper middle class kids. Basically, I was told I should be happy that I have access to food, that I have no longer any rights because I did not get vaccinated. And I'm like, excuse me? And these were my peers. These were friends of mine. Went to school together, grew up together. So this is how bad it is. This is how bad it is. It's a Nazi state. It's only getting worse. Right now, the House of Commons voted. The members of Parliament voted,
night?
I think, 100. Yeah,
what happened last night?
Last night's vote.
Yeah.
So the House of Commons voted on emergency measures. So the Prime Minister, obviously, the Emergency Measures Act was called the War Measures Act. So in terms of war, the guy
well,
or the
call
woman,
it
the man
that.
Or woman have to act.
They call it the
right.
Emergency
right.
Act. Oh, that's interesting.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
So it's a War Powers Act.
Well,
all right.
Yeah, well, it was called the War Measures Act before.
Okay.
Now it's called the Emergency Measures Act, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
how convenient.
Well, yes, and, you know, I understand it from a media space. Like, it's softer, and Canada hasn't been at war in a very long time with anybody. Now they're, well, they're, again, let me just say, they're at war with their indigenous population for a very long time. Two, outside, you know, we support the U.S., we support U.K., we, like, we support. We don't, like, we don't piss off, you know, anybody else necessarily in the world. We just join the party. Having said that, he enacted it, which I understand he has to have the ability, or that role has to have the ability to act in times of true problems and challenges. Having said that, he then sent the goon squads. There was on the boots, on the ground, you would see at least four rows of armed military, paramilitary police going after the protesters who were peaceful, singing O Canada, wearing the flag, singing. There was no violence in the crowd. There was no tear gas. There was no weapons. There was no one Molotov cocktailing anything.
But they did. They committed
so
a crime, though. They committed, not the crime stated, but they committed a crime. They opposed the government.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's what
so
all comes down
to. So the War Measures Act gets enacted. They voted last night, despite massive email campaigns from all kinds of groups, from lawyers, from veterans, from news groups, from businesses, like, you know, say no, it got voted in. I think 180 to 150. That's not the exact number, but that's around the range. So 30 people.
No,
like
that's
by
what I
30
remember.
People.
So they've certified the Emergency Act now in Parliament?
No, the Senate has to vote by tomorrow. So the Senate is the last check and balance. Unfortunately, 57 of the 100 sitting senators have been appointed by Justin Trudeau. So
wait a minute, senators get appointed?
More than, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the first mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Senate never really acts, I'll be honest. It's a cushy job. No disrespect to the senators right now, but traditionally they don't have a lot of power. So it's almost like it's people have always talked about abolishing the Senate, frankly, in Canada. Like, what's it there for?
So wait a minute.
What
so,
do they do?
So you've got, as I understand, like British parliamentary system, you've got a House of Lords and a House of Commons. But they're equal.
Right. The
they're
House
equal
of Commons
houses
are the members
and
of Parliament.
Right.
Well,
but
they
you're different.
Are theoretically, but I'm talking about real power. So, like, if you're talking about – it's a great debate in Canadian politics. What does the Senate do in Canada?
Okay. So they don't have to,
right?
So they don't
great,
have to vote on bills? Can the House pass – the House of Commons pass a bill by itself?
You know what? You're asking – I'm ashamed to say I should know this because this is what I studied.
We'll talk about it next week.
No, I can –
we'll do it next week.
I can get you
no,
that
I want
answer.
You back.
I just
– yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, so now the Senate is supposed to be the last approval, and people woke up extremely dejected. I had friends tear gassed on the weekend, stomped on, abused by police, you know, pushed
Why?
Around.
What's,
I mean, I got pushed a couple times.
What happened to the police?
Yeah.
I was amazed how fast they went from, you know, the old Adam 12, protect and serve your friendly
so
neighborhood police officer, to Nazi stormtroopers. What happened?
Right. So this is what happened.
Okay.
In my opinion, the trucker convoy did not listen to the narrative happening locally. They were more working on a federal level, provincial level, and international level. So the Ottawans got pissed off with their pitchforks. Mayor Watson took the GoFundMe. Mayor Watson put pressure on, at that point, Ottawa Chief Slowly to do something. Slowly was trying to listen to his masters, but also protect the people. So he wasn't doing enough. The Ottawa City Council were vicious. If you saw the live feeds, they're calling terrorism. They're calling it insurrection. They wanted the military. They wanted blood. And I'm not kidding. I'm not overstating.
Yeah, but for
disgusted.
Doing what, though? For what the truckers were doing.
Exactly.
And this is part that gets lost in the narrative. The horns and everything else you're saying, the narrative gets lost, that all they wanted were the mandates lifted, and the mandates aren't legal anyway.
Right. Right. But
right.
But you and I are rational people. So we didn't
right.
drink the Kool-Aid. We
yep.
haven't had mass psychosis. Diane Deans was the most vicious of them all. She's a city councilor in Ottawa East. She wanted blood. She wanted... she called it an insurrection, an occupation, and all the city councilors had that language. And again, despite me kind of trying to reach the local convoy leaders saying, guys, you've got to pay attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're missing this part of it. Please do something quickly. Now, at every moment, the leadership asked for communication. So the trucker convoy always said, meet with us, talk to us. We don't want to be here. We want to go back to our kids. We want to leave Ottawa alone. We want to be left alone in peace. Talk to us. Come talk to us. Come talk to us. At no point did any representative meet with the trucker convoy leadership. No negotiation ever happened. No, the horses come out with the flag and the two people meet and talk and then they go back. Nope, nobody ever talked to them. No one ever came down. They asked for Chief Medical Officer Tam to say, here's our scientist, show us the science. Here's our science, prove it that there's a pandemic, prove it that the vaccines work. In fact, hilarious, Mr. Trudeau got COVID. Our Governor General got COVID during the trucker convoy.
We talked about that.
And I'm like,
No,
but so Trudeau says, I think I might have COVID. I'm convalescing. By the way, go get your vax. Oh, yeah, because it works so well, right? Like, it was ludicrous. But yet people ran to get the booster. They're putting the booster in children now, the third dose in 12-year-olds.
That's disgusting.
The clinics, the Ottawa Public Health is in my child's school giving vaccines inside a school.
With or without parental permission? Are they just doing it?
No. Thank God. It is only with parental permission. But you have to understand, they are creating fear. They are creating I'm sickened. I am sickened. I've had 3 phone calls since the vote last night.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, Canadians truly believe in the system. They truly believe in democracy. They fight for it. They fight for other people who have lost it. We are the good guys. We are the peacemakers. Sorry, if I cry, I'm so sorry. It is shocking to me.
No, I understand.
That the world,
and listen, you're brave to, the things you're telling us now. No one's before on this like you have. And so I'm going to congratulate you. And, if you want to stop anytime, take a break anytime. But the things that you're telling
us now are so critical
for us to, tell you what, let's get Josie in the conversation here. Yeah, and you're on with Jennifer Clark up in Ottawa. Go ahead, Josie.
Good morning, Jennifer. I grew up in communist, and I've been watching Canada slowly get into communist. But like you just said, the people in Canada are good. They got a good heart, like Americans here. I'm a legal Latina in this country for 50 years. And since I experienced communist, it's in full color in your country, and people need to wake up. This is a wake-up call for Canadians right now, because it will be too late later. He's taking power and control of innocent people just by standing and protesting. And I just saw a video of all the truckers in a big circle praying, and they're good people. But this guy is evil. He's the son of Fidel Castro. A lot of people need to wake up. This is a wake-up call for the Canadians. And I know Biden is going to try to do the same thing. Go ahead.
Right. I believe that. So in the WEF, like if you play the game of Risk, it's New Zealand, Australia, UK, Canada, and United States, right? So we're one of the linchpins in the game. Why Trudeau is coming down hard. We're one of the centerpieces on the board game. New Zealand is far worse off than us. There's far more violence on a regular basis happening in Australia and New Zealand right now. They're shooting grandmothers with rubber bullets. They're taking children out of their homes to get vaccinated. I ask all God-loving and God-fearing people to pray. We're at the point where I don't know what else to do.
We have big groups in a group in our church. We've been praying for Canada, not just for the truckers, but for the whole country of Canada, because it's going to get ugly. Yeah, it's going to get ugly. That man needs to be removed.
I think it's the world, while I'm speaking in ground zero here, it's happening everywhere. It happened in Italy. It happened in Paris. The Arc de Triomphe, like they attack them. Like it's happening in Canada because it's so glaringly shocking. Where other countries you're used to, Europe, you're used to revolts and revolutions. In Canada, we're being used as the image of shock, like in awe, and like, well, how could it happen here? And there's a picture going
viral. Well, if it can happen there, it can happen anywhere. That's part of why it's happening in Canada. Because if it can happen to the Canadians, it can happen anywhere. That's why, I think.
Right, but that is the message. And, you know, I need to apologize to Mr. Trump. I had no idea what the ignorance of politics and the ignorance of what was really happening behind the scenes and people who are taught to defend. I wish I lived in Texas. I wish.
Hey, come to Florida. Come down to here where we're here in Milton and Pensacola. We'll welcome you.
You know, my ex-husband called me a terrorist and is threatening to take my child.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have family members. So my dad thinking I'm crazy and, you know, neighbors.
Not.
Like, I know that. But you understand when you're alone, you are the minority. And you're wondering what happened when wearing the flag was a terrorist activity and wearing a mask outside by yourself was an act of duty. The psychosis is so prevalent here that I don't know how to break the spell. And we've been dancing and singing and praying and getting outside in nature and being around, you know, fellowship and brotherhood and sisterhood. And that's what I'm doing here locally, is to try to help people rise up from their spirit, you know, to say, break the spell. And the biggest social experiment, and I want everyone to talk about this, please. There was 1 million people on that hill last Saturday, 1 million, not 10,000, 1 million. I was there.
Good.
I spoke. And most of those people were unvaccinated. And there was not one yet COVID case reported. Not one hospital has been overrun. We had the biggest social experiment of being singing unmasked in a group of people, and yet no bad thing happened. No sickness spread to the other people. We weren't a danger to our fellow citizens because our natural immunity is strong.
Amen.
Because our spirits were strong, because we were dancing. We were singing. There was music. Music is illegal. Like, you can't, like, the lockdowns, you can't dance and sing. Like, you have to understand that this is a massive, I believe this is the greatest global war we have ever had.
Yes.
Well, let me just, I hate to have to do this. We only got about 3 minutes left. I want to have you back Monday, if you can, for a couple of hours. And I want to have you back often as much as it takes to get this story out and start telling people what's going on. And to let you know, you're not alone. You're alone now because, you know, you're getting all this opposition, but these people are acting out of fear. You're acting out of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And from everything I've learned, I've been watching the Joe Rogan podcast with Dr. McCullough, Dr. Malone, and they went over very carefully mass psychosis. And I'll send this for you as well. But the cures for mass psychosis are the truth, ridicule, and parallel structures. Now, I'll make this really simple. You're telling the truth. You know the truth. You know the truth of every fiber of your being. You know the truth. Stand by that. That is your strength. Your strength is you're speaking the truth. You're saying the right things. So all these other people are acting out of fear. They're acting out of conformity. There's a whole series of videos at a place called Academy of Ideas on YouTube that explain all this and explain the mass psychosis. But as long as you're telling the truth, we tell the truth here, okay, as openly and blatantly and obviously and brutally as we have to. But we will tell the truth. The second thing is ridicule, okay? We do a lot of humor on this show. And so the reason I called Dr. Fascist Dr. Fascist is because it's funny. Even though he's the most evil man probably that's ever walked the planet, he's right up there with Hitler and Mao and, you know, Dr. Mengele and all these other kind of folks. But I call him Dr. Fascist, and Josie, you know, loves my little expression. Let me see if I can get this right here. Genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. Okay, that's his title. And I use that for a reason. Okay, so ridicule, we have to start making fun of these people. There's a great comic cartoonist, Ben Garrison. He's been on the show, he's a friend of mine. I'd like to get him back. But in comedy, do what you're doing. Make videos. I'd love to see your video. I'd love to look at your website as soon as it's ready. You and I are going to do a lot of talking. And the third thing is parallel structures.
Well, TikTok has been our – so thank you to Tucker Carlson for speaking the truth. Thank you to TikTok for putting the messaging out there. Thank you to Joe Rogan. And, you know, if you can find Joe Rogan for me, give him a hug. Like, we need people like that to stand up. And I don't know why the Canadian ones haven't done it yet. The heroes have been truckers, blue collar average Joes and Janes so far. I'm waiting for our elite to step out and say, okay, this is wrong. Like, while I may disagree on that point, what they're doing, the overreach, is wrong. So, you know, I ask all God-loving people to pray for the world, to pray for people in Ottawa and Canada. Of course, your own families, your own community. May the truth prevail.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, absolutely. And just really quick, in the 40 seconds we have left, the third thing is parallel structures. In other words, something, you know, alike what's going on, like a legislature. So what we've created here at Action Radio is a citizen legislature. We write the laws that we consent to be governed by. We operate within the system. I want to submit those bills. In fact, I tried to reach the truckers in Canada several different ways to be able to say, look, let me help you. Let's work with you. Write the laws that you want. You know, put the in statute, you know, something that can go into Parliament to remove the mandates. Let's actually do that. We're already doing that with the truckers here in the United States. Okay, they're going to have bills posted. They're going to be bringing bills to Washington. Yeah, I've only got 10 seconds. Jennifer, we'll be talking off the air, but I have to get you back because we're only starting our conversation here. But what you've done is unbelievable. But parallel structures, and I'll tell you about how it works, how the bills, how the legislation works, and how millions of people across Canada can sit in their homes and use their computers and be an entire lobbying force. And that way they can't concentrate on truckers.
Well, thank you, Greg. And yeah. Thank you for all the listeners. And again, may freedom reign.
It will.
God bless.
But we're going to have to take it back. That's the challenge. Jennifer Clark, thank you from calling from Ottawa. And like I said, we're only beginning our chats. All right. I got to go.
Yeah. I
want to go like do something incredible right now. I want to run out and, you know, get all this adrenaline I have and all this anger and do something positive with it. Well, first thing I do is a press release on both of these shows. And so if you had a chance to listen live, that's great. If you get in podcast, share the show everywhere. You want to talk about the most incredible amount of honesty I think I've ever heard on this show and the emotion. And here's a woman that loves Canada, loves what Canada stands for, loves what Canada was, not what it's become. And so we need to help her. We need to help Australia. We need to help New Zealand. And I have contacts in all these places, you know, working on England, but I have contacts also in Israel. I mean, all these places we can coordinate. I'm going to get them all on the show one day, but I have to go for now. So this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/thisinaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. You can write me at greg@writeyourlaws.com. If you want to contribute directly, we've got givesendgo.com/actionradio. And we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock in the morning Central Time, and we will continue our fight with all these wonderful people.